Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Tonight on the big program, going to talk about education. Oh, yeah, and education. Some pension issues popping up, more theft of teachers, their future. They don't need it. No, we're going to do to them what we've done to the private sector. Can't wait. Also going to talk about transportation, the bridge. Anybody remember the bridge? About 8 months, I guess. Maybe longer. Also going to talk about unemployment. And today, so much to rage about. So much anger. So much frustration. Want to hear your thoughts, questions, comments, whatever's on your mind. You can give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. I've got Pat LaMarche in studio with me tonight. Pat, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So much to get through. So much rage starting right in the White House. What in the world is going on with... Really? We're starting tapping phones and gathering information of reporters? What is this, the Bush administration?
Yeah. Well, see, this is what happened when you don't prosecute the Bush administration. They should have gone after the Bush administration for everything they did. They should have gone after them for war crimes. And if they had, these rabid neocons wouldn't be having Benghazi discussions when we ought to be talking about a whole pile of other things. So they let these bad guys get away with being bad guys, and now they're just turning their pit bulls on them.
But because I look at all this, and this is just going to be a much bigger distraction. Look, I'm infuriated by this—the fact that you're going to be targeting reporters and doing that's not what Democrats are supposed to be. Although these aren't really Democrats.
No, and that's not what the Democratic rank and file people are. It's this leadership that sort of just flip-flops back and forth between the two major parties, and it's pretty infuriating.
Well, that's what we've always done, though, Pat. It was there before. And look, the easy cop-out in this is, well, it's what the Bush administration does. Look at the IRS thing. During the Bush years, how many progressive groups did they target? How many granny groups baking cookies against the war did they target?
You know what makes me nuts about this? Anybody who's got money in the game in politics should be scrutinized. They shouldn't be backing off the conservative groups. They should be laying it on all of them. No, good. You slowed them down 13 months. Slow them all down 13 months. And while you're at it, go after the churches. Everybody who's got tax exemption. Everybody.
See, now that's my answer. There should be no tax exemption.
Right. You're going to raise all this money to do whatever the heck you want to do, including own my congressman? I want the IRS crushing you. I want you crushed. You own my congressman flat.
Especially the one I've got.
I think he's mine, too.
Oh, you know, probably one of the worst guys in Congress, Lou Barlotta.
He's got some real stiff competition.
You know, they say that, you know, what is it, 8% of the people have an approval rating of Congress, but their own guy's good. My own guy, he's in that 8%.
But, you know, what's really also infuriating is then they run somebody who's awful against them, which was the whole conversation last week with Sanford. Okay, now the Republicans put Sanford up, and then... As our guest from South Carolina said last week when you had the... By the way, how was your birthday?
It was great. I had a wonderful day.
Good.
I'm a year older now.
And Mother's Day was good.
Mother's Day was terrific.
Yeah. But the guy who we're talking to from South Carolina, Greg Jacoby, he says, you got to understand what happened. They hate Hollywood elite, so who do they run? The sister of a big shot liberal... No, he's not Hollywood elite, he's New York City, you know... media elite, but they just use
he's
it against
a comedian.
Her.
I,
You know what? The problem with those comedians, he and Jon Stewart, is they've got more brain power than just about anybody else running anything.
They're smart enough not to get into the game.
Yeah, and smart enough to know that the game is.
Yeah, because I've had people go, well, why don't you run for something? I go, because, look, I couldn't tolerate this ridiculous back and forth. This Benghazi thing has got me pulling my hair out because I don't see that they're there. What I see is I see opportunism, and I see the Republicans going, oh, here's a chance to stick our thumb in this guy's eye. When they were part of the problem of defunding a large portion of it.
3,000 plus people died in the World Trade Center. I really, honest to God, on soil here, unprotected, when Mr. Vacation Happy Land had more time off, the president had more time off than anybody else, you know, cutting wood down in Crawford, Texas, and that he was told by everybody from the Clinton administration about this.
Yeah.
Only one plane leaves the country after they ground all the airplanes. It's the one with the Bin Laden family on it,
yeah.
Right? That might have been leverage. Hang on to the family, you know, and they're talking Benghazi.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that really, really infuriates me about the current administration is slap these people down.
Exactly.
Answer them with, are you kidding? Are you okay? Let's get your little fellas, the ones who now can't travel to old Europe, and let's send them to The Hague.
I'm with you. Except what the administration's done is they've pretty much thrown Hillary to the wolves now.
Well, of course, because Hillary.
Which seems dumb to me.
I know. Well, Hillary, I think you know. I got a lot of problems with Hillary. I do. I have a lot of them. And she probably doesn't want me calling her Hillary. Secretary Clinton. I have a lot of problems with her. But the one thing I do know is she's next in line. I have problems with that, too. But she's next in line. But you know what? The next in line, Secretary Clinton especially, she will be very independent in her dependence on this big money. She will be very independent when she does it. She's got a great swagger about her.
Yeah.
And she's got Mr. Swagger for her husband, right? And I just
Whom
don't
I was
think
never a fan.
Yeah. I don't think she's going to bend over the way President Obama has. And the thing that really drives me crazy about President Obama is his stimulus worked.
Yeah.
Have you heard him say that? It worked.
And you know who it worked for?
People.
The very well-to-do.
Oh,
I mean, if you look at all the, you look at the studies that Emmanuel Saez did, you know, since the recovery, 93% in 2010 of all new income gains went to the top 1%. 2011, a whopping 121% of all new income gains went to the top 1%. So when I get to speak to crowds, I go, have you seen the recovery? And the sad reality is people like you and me, Pat, we didn't see it. We didn't see the recovery.
But
did you see the S&P 500?
But while I didn't see the recovery, I did see the stimulus work. I did see the rapid rehousing and homeless prevention money work. I did see roads get built. I did see, talking about the bridge, but you're still driving by the projects that were funded by that. You know what? That guy with a hard hat on, he's working. So, and when you talk about a 10% or 14% or effective 19% unemployment rate, it could have been 50.
Yeah.
You know, people act like it went to the maximum. Well, that's just absolutely not true. But nobody is saying, by the way, that worked. And, oh, by the way, it worked so well. Screw the sequester craziness. Do it again.
It should have been bigger. And I said from the beginning,
again.
It should have been much bigger.
Pass it again. 2 more years of feeding money into the bottom of the economy.
But, Pat, we're broke. We don't have any money.
All right, I tell you what. Let's have a big yard sale.
And I know where we start. We start with the guy yesterday. What was the name of that place? Brett Carolin's Chateau? The guy who owns the San Francisco Giants.
Yeah.
Who his employee, the people who serve the concessions at Giants Stadium, haven't seen a raise in 3 years. Even though the Giants have won 2 World Series in the last 3 years. Attendance through the roof. Profits through the roof, wildly successful. He lives in this 65,000 square foot, 92 room mansion, and no pay increase for you working people. Sorry, because and like the plea I made last night, this is a billionaire who in 2006 was number 52 on the Forbes 400 list. He was number 52. He has fallen. all the way down to 211.
Which means a whole pile of people have clawed their way past him.
Yeah, and we've got to help him. And this is what I told the lady who works there last night. You know, your sacrifice is well appreciated because we really need him to get back to 52 because we take such pride in our billionaires.
You know, there's somebody already at 52. 52's not empty.
Come on, you don't have any pride.
It's not vacant.
You don't have any pride. And you look at the Senate committee today. Approved a $4 billion cut in the Supplemental Nutrition and Assistance Program. $4 billion. Now, that's not the $21 billion that the House Republicans wanted to strip out of SNAP with their piece of garbage. And I love the guy who said, well, you know, Stephen King, who... Not your Stephen King, Representative Iowa Republican. Who said,
by the way, my Stephen King doesn't like this guy having his name. Doesn't like it at all.
I can imagine because this guy's in. Well, yeah. He said, you know, those people, they won't even notice the $21 billion that we're stealing from food programs to help those make them get a job.
You know what? They want a job. First of all, a lot of the people who get SNAP are working. They just work feeding you, and those jobs don't pay well enough. A, and two. The people who don't have a job want a job. It isn't like everybody's saying, Yahoo, I don't have a job. Hey, isn't this great, hon? We can't do anything. And if another month, maybe we won't be able to do it underneath a bridge abutment. Because we're not going to be able to do it in our apartment anymore.
Well, if you listen to Governor Corbett, you know, I listened to the clip of him saying, you know, that, you know, we've got a bunch of drug addicts who people can't pass drug tests.
There are many employers. That say, you know, we're looking for people. But we can't find anybody that that has passed the drug test, a lot of them. And that's a concern for me because we're having a serious problem with that.
Serious problem. You know, how many people actually fail a drug test when they take them here in the state of Pennsylvania? 3.8%. That's a serious problem.
That's nationally, a lot of people who should be doing drugs who aren't. I'll tell you that right now.
Well, this guy's one of them. I wonder if we should test that. I wonder how many of the people across the street over at the Capitol, how many of those people would pass a drug test?
Well, you saw that the state of Florida passed the drug test for people who were receiving temporary aid for needy families. And TANF, otherwise known to most people as welfare. Although that's changed its name, too, I think. Anyway, they did a drug test on those people and found that it was actually lower than that 3 point. It's lower than the average for people. And people who are really poor, they're not wasting their money on drugs. And when, of course, the Civil Liberties Union eventually threw that whole thing out anyway because it was against.
Yeah, they fought it.
Yeah. But the fact that even when they did it, all it did was cost Florida money to find out that less people were using than they thought.
Now, I'm in favor of, if you really wanted to test people who have control of our country, test the people in Congress, test all those criminals on Wall Street, and then talk to me about poor people.
Test the criminals on Wall Street and test the people who are in Congress.
Not right. I think that's what I said.
Yeah. Is that what you said? Was that the first one?
Yeah, that's the first one. Test them first.
Yeah. Well, you're right, and obviously test me.
You can test me all you want. I'm one of the only people I've ever met who's never done any illegal drugs. And not because I'm goody two shoes, just because if I started, I would be the best drug addict. I would be the guy Tom Corbett worries about.
That's why I've never had a cigarette.
Yeah.
Because if I had a cigarette, I'd have all of them.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's my personality.
Right there with you.
Yeah.
Anyway, thoughts, questions, comments, whatever is on your mind, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jeff Russell.
1,127. That's the final death toll due to the collapse of a garment factory building in Bangladesh. The number of dead and injured makes the tragedy the worst disaster in the history of the garment industry. A global focus has been turned on Bangladesh and worker safety in that country since the incident 3 weeks ago, and reforms are already starting to take place. On Monday, the Bangladesh government announced workers would be allowed to form unions without prior permission from factory owners. Previously, workers could only form a union if a factory owner agreed to the request. The government is also making plans to raise the country's minimum wage for the garment industry. Since the collapse, 22 garment factories have been temporarily shuttered for safety and labor violations. Labor leaders are asking the president to keep his word when it comes to Social Security. Doug Cunningham reports.
When Barack Obama was running for president in 2008, he said that he would not cut Social Security. We want the president to remember what he said and not go back on his word.
You had Senator Bernie Sanders speaking at a rally protesting President Obama's proposed Social Security cuts. Sanders delivered 2 million petitions opposed to the cuts to the White House. AFL-CIO says Social Security cuts are unconscionable. SEIU President Mary Kay Henry says her union objects to Obama's proposals to cut Social Security and Medicare benefits. Social Security pays for itself and doesn't add to the national deficit or debt. Any future shortfalls can be eliminated by simply raising the income cap on Social Security taxes. No Social Security tax is paid right now on income above $113,000. Senator Sanders says Obama needs to keep his promise not to cut Social Security, and tens of millions of people must mobilize to stop the cuts.
To rally tens of millions of people who understand that in this country, the middle class working families are hurting, and we're not going to balance the budget on their backs. Our job is to rally those people and give anybody in the Congress who believes in cutting these life important benefits, we're going to give them a political choice they can't refuse. And that is, if they vote to cut Social Security, they may well not be returning to Washington. Thank you all very much.
Concession workers at AT&T Park in San Francisco have authorized their union to call a strike. The workers are represented by Unite Here Local 2 and have been without a contract for 3 years. The park is home to the San Francisco Giants baseball team.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Every now and then I visit an elementary school. Talking with children is a pretty good idea, I think. They ask questions we don't think about, and they ask them very directly. Recently, a little girl wanted to know, what's the hardest part of your job? That got me thinking. I looked down and I told her, the hardest part is telling people no.
It's so hard to tell, and especially the little girl. I mean, I wonder if he looked down and said, sorry, honey, no education for you. We're cutting $1 billion from K through 12 education for the next couple of years. Sorry, your opportunity. No. Who he can't say no to, the drillers. Can't say no to those. Can't say no to big corporations. Can't seem to say no to the handouts, the welfare for them. No, that's sacrosanct. But no to that girl and her future. No to people who need help. You look at the general assistance budget, wiped out. The neediest people in our Commonwealth kicked to the curb. Those are the priorities our governor seems to have. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. You can like us on Facebook, Facebook.com/RickSmithShow, and also follow us on Twitter, Twitter.com/RickSmithShow. I've got Eddie Dave Pashinsky on the line, Pennsylvania State Representative. Eddie, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, it's always a pleasure to be on the show with you, Rick.
So I look at our governor saying, you know, the hardest part of his job is to say no. It would be nice if he said no more handouts for these big companies and no more Delaware loophole and no more giveaways.
Well, that's the main point of this whole conversation. You know, he's painted a picture that Pennsylvania has no money. We have no money because he hasn't gone to the pots of money that's available to him. The point you made about the big corporations, you know, we've given the big corporations over $1 billion in tax cuts in this short time with no guarantee of any Pennsylvania job. That's unconscionable. When you start looking at the Marcellus Shale tax, the extraction tax that we wanted to put on the companies in 2 years ago, you're talking about 5%, which would have been you know, one of the lower ones throughout the United States. We are the only state not to have the extraction tax. Now, the reason I say that is because I just recently attended energy seminar where the energy industry indicated that they have extracted 2.2 trillion cubic feet of natural gas.
And trillion with a T, Eddie?
With a T, as in Tommy, 2.2 trillion. And the industry had indicated that it has paid back to Pennsylvania about $400 in taxes. $400 million in taxes over the last 2 years. But when you compute the 5%, if we had the 5% on the extraction of the 2.2 trillion cubic feet, it would be somewhere around $800 to $900 million. So there's an example of where we have lost $400 to $500 million that we could be using for our schools, for our human services, for the things that we need, maybe even our transportation, our roads and bridges.
Let me ask
you
this, Eddie.
Go ahead.
You know, I look at this situation. Our governor said he wants us to be the Texas of the Northeast. I'm curious, if we had the tax rate, extraction tax, whatever, severance tax, impact, whatever you want to call it, if we had the same thing that Texas, if we're to be the Texas of the Northeast, that our more jobs governor claims he wants us to be, what kind of revenue would we bring in?
Again, you're talking about $1 billion. And you know, remember, the industry has been up and running now since about 2007. And you're talking about 5-6 years. They haven't even got into high gear yet. And you're talking about literally billions of dollars that we're going to be losing because we do not have that extraction tax. Remember, the excise fee that he put on there diminishes every year. So each year you have that fee that he put on. It starts out at about $35,000, and in 8 to 10 years it goes down to zero.
That's
so
insane.
We're in a position to lose huge sums of dollars.
And you know, we're taking this labor history tour across the country here, starting on June 6th. Going to go across country. We're going to be going through Texas because I want to see what it is that our governor wants us. You know, he seems to have this Texas fetish. I want to see what it is that he wants to turn our state into.
Yeah, but you know, the Texas fetish. I think they're at 7% on their extraction tax. Now, they do have a different kind of tax structure within the state relative to corporate net income tax and various taxes of that sort. But, you know, we have legislation out there that's beginning to reduce that corporate net income tax. We are willing, the Democrats are more than willing to sit down with business and begin to reduce those taxes as long as we eliminate the Delaware loophole.
Oh, see, that's a non-starter in Corbett land. We got to have that magic box because, you know, we love to have that point to beat up the tax system. We got one of the highest in the country. Yet, the number I saw, 74% of the companies in this state pay no corporate net income tax.
That is correct, and that is because they have batteries of lawyers and accountants that can legally circumvent paying taxes. And that's why combined reporting, which is what we've been promoting, is a far better system. It's fairer.
Yep.
You can reduce the corporate net income tax and some of the other taxes on the companies, but they end up paying their fair share of the products that they sell in Pennsylvania. And they don't ship everything to Delaware by not paying it. And the disheartening thing here is that every listener that you have, most likely, everybody that goes to work every day and gets a paycheck every week or every month, their taxes come out automatically.
Yep.
They're not trying to hide their taxes. And that's the thing that's disheartening. These big companies have to realize, you know, there were literally hundreds of thousands of service people that died so that we could be free, so they could actually do business in a free society with good infrastructure and security and all the money that's been put into our system so that they could freely make the money that they want to make. They forgot about that. They have to pay their fair share. Once they do, things will not be as difficult.
See, but you know, you say that the businesses have to pay their fair share. That's your job to make sure that that happens by closing that Delaware tax haven. Because that's what it is.
Tried.
I mean, we keep it's a loophole. It's not a loophole. It's a tax haven.
Well, again, that's tax avoidance, and you are 100% correct. The problem is we are just outnumbered. We do not have the votes in the House. We're outnumbered greatly there. The Senate is 27-23, and you have the governor that made a pledge to Grover Norquist and the ALEC coalition rather than making a pledge to the people of Pennsylvania. That's where the problem is. We just don't have the numbers to fight it.
You know, but here's the thing. We got a governor who's willing to tell that little girl that asked him, you know, what the hardest part of his job is, telling her, no, sorry, no education. We're going to cut education from you. But leaving that tax haven in place so that we see all of this resource going, all this revenue going away, and her future along with it. And my question then becomes, what happens when the revenue from the 2.2 trillion cubic feet of the next year or two comes out of the ground, out from under our feet? What happens with that money? Do we get any more of that?
What happens
if we start exporting?
You're only going to get that fee that's put on each well. It starts at $35,000 for the first year, goes down to $30,000, then $25,000, and it diminishes down to nothing. And that was the plan that Governor Corbett wanted, and the Republicans passed.
Stupid.
We fought that tooth and nail. We wanted to put an excise tax of 5% on it. Just recently, I don't know if you noticed, there were also several other incentives that was just given out. There's about, they started out at $25 million. They're suggesting it's going to end up to be about $60 million in incentives that are going to go back to many of these companies we're talking about to transform their gasoline vehicles to natural gas vehicles. Okay? So you're going to give them this tax break, and again, these same groups aren't paying their fair share for what they should be doing. So he's willing to give all these incentives to these big companies, but there's no incentives out there to create the jobs that he could create through a good transportation bill. Because I believe you know that if you invest $1 billion in improving roads and bridges, that's 30,000 jobs.
Yep.
And his own commission said he needs $2.5 billion. You can float a bond for that at 1.5%, and you can put 75,000 people to work. He's not doing it. Same thing with Medicaid expansion, Rick. There's been so many studies done by legitimate organizations like the Kaiser Foundation, the RAND Company, the Economy League. All of them say that if Governor Corbett allowed for Medicaid expansion in Pennsylvania, it would be economic. Positive for the people of Pennsylvania. That's 35,000 jobs in 2 years, 40,000 jobs in 8 years. And these jobs are living wage jobs in the high 40s and the low 50s. Between transportation and Medicaid expansion, Rick, you're talking 110,000 jobs.
Yeah, but he's already created that. He's the more jobs governor, don't you know?
Yeah, more jobs. We keep losing them under his. Under his reign, he already cut 16,000 teachers a year and a half, 2 years ago. It's up to 20,000 between education staff and teachers. He cut well over 1,000 state employees. He's going after the privatization of liquor. That's another 5,000. I can tell you that every one of our departments are in a log jam. They can't get the service out to the people because they don't have enough staff. You know, you can only cut so far, Rick, and then after a while, you are not efficient.
Well, isn't that the point?
Inefficient, and it's costing the people more money.
Yeah, isn't that the point, though? Isn't the point to bog down government agencies, to bog down government, make it look like, because they keep telling me government doesn't work, it's inefficient, it's ineffective, and it's true. When they run things, it is. But
that's exactly correct. Make it look bad, therefore. That's how you demonize government. That's how you begin to privatize it. You take care of your own. You take care of your big boys, and they make the money. And the regular folks pay.
But let me ask you on this Medicaid expansion money, because, you know, Corbett has said, you know, down the road it's going to cost us, and, you know, we're broke because we don't have any money because we've given it all away to the Delaware tax haven. in looking at this, you know, this idea that we're broke, which seems to be permeating our entire discussion about any investment in our infrastructure, in education, in healthcare, in any of that. How do you push back? Because we know the money's there. We just don't know that. We just know the political will's not.
Well, the way we push back is, you and I talked about this before, it's called the truth. You know, some people will consider what I say is just political fodder. The Kaiser Foundation is not political. The RAND Corporation, the Economy League, these are objective, qualified, well-recognized organizations that do studies. So when they come out and say Medicaid expansion in Pennsylvania will create 35,000 jobs, will create economic growth, will reduce the cost of counties and states for the uncompensated care, because what happens is, since you have, you know, a million people that need health care and now are going to county services and state services, once they're put onto Medicaid, now they come off the county rolls and they come off the state rolls. So that's how you begin to reduce the cost of state dollars and county dollars. And remember, the first 3 years of Medicaid expansion, the federal government pays 100% of the cost. So by increasing the jobs, those people are contributing to the economy. They're paying taxes. We're lowering the cost because we have less people on county and health and state health services. And now, it, at the very worst, Rick, it is a wash.
See, as there you
time
go again.
Goes on, as time goes on, the federal government reduces the 100% to 97 to 95 to 93 down to 90, but never goes below 90. But at that point, you've got 40,000 jobs. You have more people that are healthy, less drain on the system.
See, there you go again, talking sense. How dare you? Come on. This is ideology. We don't want Obamacare.
Yeah, you know, and for the folks that are still on that kick, listen, if Obama did absolutely nothing, your health care costs would still be going through the roof.
Yep.
He at least had the courage to put it on the front burner. And there's a lot of excellent things in that Affordable Care Act. It's not perfect. And I'll tell you, it didn't address the price gouging. It didn't address the overcharging and the high profiteering of pharmaceutical companies or, you know, hospitals, insurance companies. It was primarily addressed to the insurance industry. There's still a lot of work that has to be done.
Yep.
But, you know, if we could just stop this political, wrangling and sit down at the table and start fixing the problems for the people, we would all benefit from it.
I'm right there with you, Eddie. I appreciate the time. It's always great talking with you. I don't know how you do it. I know if I were in your shoes, I'd probably strangle somebody by now.
It is very frustrating. But I keep thinking about the people I represent, the people that need it, and there's so many. We all have the energy. We're going to continue to fight the good fight for the people and continue to tell the truth to your listeners.
There you go. Eddie, I appreciate the time, brother. Anytime.
Thank you, Rick. My pleasure.
Thanks so much. Our good friend, Pennsylvania State Representative Eddie Dave Pashinsky. Break right back, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Stick around.
Beat up cars with the tires and drummers go crack, boom, bam. ROTK in the USA, ROTK in the USA, ROTK in the USA, yeah, yeah. In the USA.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
AFSCME Council 13 members. Did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
At last, some excellent economic news for folks long mired in the stagnant labor market. Jobs spring back, exclaimed a typical headline on recent reports that 165,000 private sector jobs were added in April. Wow! The thunderous three-year boom of prosperity that has rained riches on Wall Street is finally beginning to shower on our streets, right? Well, as dryland farmers can tell you, thunder ain't rain. Read beneath the joyful headlines and you'll see the parched truth. For example, more than a third of working-age Americans are either out of work or have given up finding a job. Also, last month's hiring increase was almost entirely for receptionists, waiters, temp workers, car rental agents, and other low-wage positions. On the other hand, manufacturing, generally the source of good middle-class jobs, did not add workers in April and has cut some 10,000 jobs in the last year. Especially problematic was the continued rise in underemployment, people wanting full-time work but having to take part-time and temporary jobs. Underemployment is also pounding college graduates. While they've been more successful than non-grads at landing jobs, they're not getting jobs that fit their career goals or even require the degrees they spent money and time to obtain. Indeed, many of those rental agents and restaurant employees you encounter hold four-year degrees, forcing everyone else to scramble for the few even lower-paid jobs further down the skill ladder. This is Jim Hightower saying, meanwhile, the next graduating class is about to flood into the labor market with nowhere to go. America's middle class is in a crisis, while our pathetic political leaders pretend that Wall Street's prosperity covers us all. And the corporate media puts little happy face stickers over the dark reality faced by the workaday majority.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Texas is a right-to-work state. Texas is a great state.
Well, pardon me if I don't share.
We could be the Texas of the Northeast.
They're selling make-believe and we don't buy that here. 'Cause in the real world, they're shutting Detroit down.
Welcome back to the Richmond Show. Yeah, the Texas of the Northeast, Pat. We could be the Texas of the Northeast.
That means that we can have our manufacturing plants blow up.
No, don't, please don't.
Is it that what he wants? Is that what happens when we kill government? I mean, that fellow you just had on, he was spectacular.
No, but, I love Eddie. He's a great guy.
And that's what happens when you shut down government. When was the last time that place was inspected?
1985.
Yeah.
I graduated from high school.
Last time you were inspected, too, no doubt.
No, but I look at this.
Come check this guy out. It's been a while.
No, but I look at this. And the thing that caught my attention above and beyond, you know, the fact that 1985 was the last time it was inspected, you had an elementary school 500 feet from this explosion site. You had a nursing home 1,000 feet. You had a hospital 2,500 feet. Who in their right mind came up with these zoning regulations?
All that is just a better reason to be inspecting it. You know, okay, if you don't really care what happens to the people that work there, well, how about the people that go to school up the street? But that's, I think, what Governor Corbett was saying. I don't care. Hey, little girl, guess what? Saying no is a problem. I don't necessarily have to say it very often at lunch or cocktail parties, but I do have to say it quite a bit when talking to seven-year-olds. Because guess what? The answer is no. And all I can think of when I think about, you know, what happens if we continue to denude our government agencies is, what happens when a fuel truck blows up on the overpass to Route 81? Oh, gee, that happened. But if you watch the video, all of those sprays of water, what if they don't get there that quickly? I mean, those people were way too close, in my opinion. They were really brave and courageous putting that fire out, you know?
Yeah,
and
but we
now
can find
it's
people
take
do it for minimum wage with no pension. And we've got a Senator Eichelberger who's proposed to take collective bargaining rights away from cops and firefighters. Because, you know, hey, you know, we call them heroes when we need them, but, you know, hey, you know, the rest of that, not so much.
Well, now they can prove their hero, right?
Yeah.
Do it all without a pension. It's just crazy. And I was watching that video and watching those sprays of water, and I'm thinking, my God, those people are that close and that brave. The smell of concrete burning must have been incredible. And the things were exploding in the middle of the explosion. What the heck was all of that?
That was diesel fuel, and that was the all of that.
And the response, and now it's going to take
7,500 gallons.
Wow.
7,500 gallons.
And
boom.
And nobody died.
That's the amazing part. The driver walked away from it, and you know, right. lucky for him.
And a whole pile of other cars didn't end up like awash with fuel and blowing up. I mean, they really, the people that were supposed to be there were there for the people of Pennsylvania. And that's the kind of stuff that'll stop happening if we stop funding the things that are necessary. And government is a wonderful thing.
Yeah, what we need to do, we need to do like they do in Tennessee. It's all voluntary. And we bring our buckets. And we have a long line of buckets. See, that would have done it. We could throw the bucket up there.
Amazing.
No, not going there with me?
Yeah. Amazing. And what, it's still going to be closed for 8 months,
yeah,
well, right?
I don't even want to get into how long that nightmare is going to happen.
Were you in the traffic Sunday?
I was in the traffic. It happened Thursday. I came to work on Thursday. It took me 2.5 hours to get to work. And Friday was a nightmare. And
I took a train to a family party in New Jersey, and I took the train back. And I was getting a ride. Somebody was picking me up because, oh, we don't have public transportation on the weekends.
No.
Are you kidding me?
No.
That's like back then.
We're in central Pennsylvania. You know, Corridor 1 can never happen here, Pat.
Well, back in New England, they close the libraries on the weekends, you know, because kids and working people don't have anything to do during the week. But, okay, so I could see the like, lunacy of not having public transportation on the weekends. But anyway, no way to get back to Carlisle from Harrisburg except get bum a ride. It was a car show this weekend.
That's right.
Yeah. So I stood outside the train station for about an hour, and the person left on time to pick me up. It took them an hour and a half to get from Carlisle to Harrisburg in that traffic, and that's what's going to happen.
8 months.
Yeah.
Oh, I cannot wait. And, you know, the thing that gets me is, you know, the company that this guy drove for,
yeah,
they have $1 million of insurance.
Ooh, that's not going to go far.
It's not. So who's going to get stuck covering the cost of that bridge?
Well, you know what? I think someone should ask the governor. He loves to say no.
Yeah, well, it's going to be you and me.
Why can't they sue the insurance company and the...
They got $1 million liability. That's it. $1 million. That's it. That's what the company was insured for. What will probably end up happening, I talked to my lawyer friend today, who was saying, you know, they've got $1 million. I checked the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration's website,
mm-hmm,
and came up with this company that, you know, says, you know, here's how much insurance this company had. Sorry, out of luck, $1 million. So what will probably happen is the insurance company will say, here's $1 million. We're done with the claim. Mm-hmm. This is what the policy was. Now you'll have to go back after the company. The company will file bankruptcy.
Yeah, and that'll be bad.
So then at the end of it, they'll just reopen up under a different name. Tomorrow they'll be back. Instead of Joe's Trucking, it'll be Bob's Trucking. And they'll be back and seamless. And you and I, we're the ones who are stuck with this. So when people say, oh, we don't need those regulations, we need to be like Texas. You look at what's going on in Texas. And when we get through to West Texas on our tour, I assume the people in West will have realized that they're going to get screwed because the insurance isn't going to cover their property being destroyed, isn't going to cover the millions of dollars of damage, the tax revenue from the town, who they're claiming, the people who lost their homes, they're going to have to pay property tax on their destroyed homes. So you're looking at all of this because you know what, that business, just there was just too much regulation, Pat. We want to be like Texas.
You know, I'm so conflicted right now because there are two things going through my head. One is, if something is a legitimate accident, and I'm sure that we'll hear an awful lot about this truck.
Oh. No, he like a lot of trucks at that bend. Yeah. They go too fast, they're not familiar with it, and they turn over. Happens And in fact, my lawyer friend said, if I was defending the company, I would sue the state for poorly engineering the bridge.
Well, that's my question. Was the bridge wrong? I mean, a lot of trucks go on that bridge and don't flip over.
Look, I drove a truck for years.
Yeah.
I went over that bridge a lot. You see the big sign says, slow the hell down.
Yeah. So he didn't slow down. So it's going to be his fault. So there are two things. One is when something is a legitimate accident and when it's legitimately not somebody's fault, then I think as a society we need to pitch in and make up the difference. I'm okay with that. I think that's why we have government. That is why we have taxes. Like your friend, though, the gentleman, Eddie, he has the more official title.
The state representative.
Yes, I'm sorry. Representative Eddie, like... I get really all bent up about titles. But Representative Eddie was talking about, you know what? That's what government's for, is to collect the taxes from everybody. And that guy who's driving a Mercedes, his car blows up and costs him more to lose than your $200 beater. So he really needs to chip in so that his Mercedes doesn't catch fire. But we all pitch in. We got to get all those big fat cats to pitch in. And then we pay for stuff.
Yep. I'm with you.
Or... we regulate people. We don't let bad things happen. And when it does happen, they go to prison like they do in China. They execute them.
Can we start that here?
I settle for prison.
Can we start that here?
What?
I'm not a death penalty person.
Me either.
But there's some.
Yeah.
I mean, could be convinced.
The guy who runs the Deepwater Horizon. Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. I want those people in prison. I guess one guy's going to go to prison. They all, like, sat around one night and drank scotch and pulled straws until it was like, all right,
you're
going to
fall
prison.
On the sword.
Yeah, like Scooter Libby. Okay, one of us will go to prison. You know, and in the meantime, everybody's getting away with literally murder. 11 dead at Deepwater.
Right.
Right? Why isn't that terrorism?
Not to mention all of the revenue lost, all of the lives damaged, all of the property damaged that, you know, maybe we'll...
I was doing one of those crazy live-in homeless places tours I could do that. It was 10 months later. That happened to April of, 2010? February of 2011, I was tooling along the Gulf Coast picking up tar balls. You know, big signs that say, hey, it's okay to eat the shrimp. I'm like, yeah, and a pig's eye.
Yeah. I'm surprised they didn't charge you for the tar balls.
Yeah, really. I have tar balls filled with sand because they rolled around and were made in the ocean, and then they collected up sand and probably little critters. And then there were only billboards. The only billboards in the southeast then were, eat the shrimp, please. You don't even need olive oil. It fries itself. And the other ones were, if you didn't get your Gulf claim money, call me, attorneys.
Yeah,
right.
They're going to get their chunk of it.
No, but the point was, BP wasn't paying, so there was a whole new feast of litigators. Because are they really kidding? What they were? They didn't know if they wanted Halliburton to pay. Halliburton wasn't sure whether they were going to pay until the other guys that made the concrete were going to pay. And in the meantime, those fishermen who can't sell the shrimp.
Yeah, I mean, we talked to a number of them. We had a number of folks on during that time and have since. And we say, you know, it's still not bad. And the families are still struggling. It's just, it's maddening. And this is what happens when you have a breaking down of government, a breaking down of oversight and regulators. You know, the job killers. You know, what about all the jobs that are dead now because of these horrendous accidents?
CEO imprisoners. That's what we need.
I'm with you. Special colored jumpsuits, so everyone knows. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Right away, I'm under attack. I might be down for a moment, but I always go back. It's time for war!
Values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
At PSECU, we'd love to help you get the ride you're drawn to. Buy the car you truly want with a loan you can afford. Car, truck, minivan, SUV, scooter, or cycle, new or used, we have a solution for you. Rate as low as 1.49 annual percentage rate. Additional rates and terms are available. With PSECU, you can get the ride you truly want.
At PSECU, we've lowered our rates just in time for summer. Get the car you truly want with a 2.99 annual percentage rate. New, used, or simply refinance the car you already have. Choose a payment term of 6 or 7 years, which means more cash in your pocket now. Additional rates and terms are available. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit pseCU.com/life today.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal opportunity lender.
Earth. Sky.
An asteroid you might not have known to worry about has been given the all clear.
Astronomers thought that this asteroid had the potential to collide with Earth in the year 2040. But data from the Gemini Observatory in Hawaii has shown that this asteroid will not collide with Earth. This asteroid is called 2011 AG5. It's about 140 meters in diameter, about the length of two American football fields.
Astronomers agree that if this object were to collide with the Earth, it would release several thousand times as much energy as the atomic bomb that ended World War II. Statistically, they say, a body of this size should impact the Earth on average every 10,000 years. But 2011 AG5 will not hit us in 2040.
Why do we hear so much nowadays about asteroids passing near Earth? The fact is that astronomers are now actively looking for asteroids that come near Earth, and that's why they're finding them. A telescopic survey of the sky, called the Mount Lemmon Survey, found asteroid 2011 AG5. This survey is specifically designed to look for asteroids that pass near Earth.
Astronomers found 2011 AG5 early in the year 2011. They had to observe its orbit long enough to be certain of it, to learn that Earth no longer falls along a possible future path for this asteroid in 2040. I'm Emily Howard.
And I'm Michael Brennan. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Just when you thought it was safe, those crazy Republicans are at it again. It's time for the Rick Smith Show's Conservative Alert.
Well, the well-funded, well-heeled shill group, the Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania. I love that. It's like we're stupid. It's like history's not repeating itself. They came out with their release today saying, you know, Pennsylvania is one of the worst states in the country, in the bottom 10, according to Business Again. They say that it's because of our tax code, and it's because stupid regulations, and it's a stupid state. stupid. This is what the CEOs are saying. But the report did say, Pennsylvania does have the highest skilled workforce, welders, pipe fitters, et cetera, to get work done. Highest skilled, has an excellent group of colleges and universities, and a lot of college graduates. So we have engineers and we have a good workforce. It's that tax. It's that 9.99%. That's that 9.9%. The highest, one of the highest in the country. Except nobody pays it. 74% of the companies. Don't worry about that. That's the behind them. But I get these things from the Citizens Alliance, Pat.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone who goes back and remembers the history of our country realizes that citizens' alliances of the past were exactly like this shill group for the big corporations now. They're funded by big moneyed interests to tell working people that the unions are bad, the unions are going to screw you, and you as an individual, you need to be weary of those people. And what I love about this whole Citizens Alliance thing is, again, it's another one of those moments where the business community, the wealth class, has stolen an idea from labor. Because labor used to have these groups called the National Citizens Industrial Alliances. Basically unions. Back in the 1880s, 1890s, where they were saying, look, you're getting screwed on the job, you're getting cheated out of wages, out of pay, you need to band together and stand and fight together. Well, what business came up with is, well, we'll call ourselves the Citizens Alliance because those working people are stupid. They'll join us because we're just like the National Citizens Industrial Alliance, but we're just the Citizens Alliance. It's shorter, easier to remember, right? Because we're stupid. We're just not smart. And they had another one, you know, the Modern Order of Bees, which I always loved. Modern, I've got to ask the Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania, since they had to steal something from the past to be a shill group of the yesteryear, why didn't they just become the Modern Order of Bees? Or the Hooli Ghoulies, which they were also known by.
Hooli Ghoulies?
Hooli Ghoulies. And they would go around and they would say, you know, what you've got is you've got these unions who want, you know, they want to put you down with tyranny and slavery and all of this stuff. And you go, hold on a second. Am I missing something? Because you look at Bangladesh right now. That's the conditions that they were working under in the 1880s, 1890s. And I often say that the business class wants to take us back to the good old days of the 80s and 90s, the 1880s and 1890s. And who's behind most of this stuff? And you go back, Pat, to that history, the National Association of Manufacturers. They were one of the main groups back then. You look just across the road over here, over on State Street, where the Pennsylvania Manufacturing Association is. Mm-hmm. Basically, the National Association of Manufacturers, just the Pennsylvania chapter, mm-hmm. Where all of this money flows into these front groups, like the Commonwealth Foundation, like the Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania, all of these shill front groups who keep saying, you know, you working people, you need to be individuals. You don't need those unions. You don't need those. You don't need each other. You don't need government. You just need yourself. Pushing this bizarre liberty of contract. You're willing to work in crappy conditions for no wages. You should be able to do it. And I look at this and I go, you know, how much further down the road do we have to go with this? The Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association.
As far as it takes.
The Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association makes their money off of injured workers. They use the money from workers' compensation, because this was set up back in 1915. And it's public knowledge. The PMA insurance. We as working people fund our own demise. And it drives me absolutely insane that you can't get people to realize that we're funding our own demise. They set up these schemes. They set up workers' comp from the beginning was an insurance scheme to get money from workers so that they can cheat them, of course, and fund politicians and programs to make working conditions worse. And what in 100 years has changed? Nothing.
The thing that's really difficult about all this is if you say to somebody, do you lock your doors when you get out of your car in downtown Harrisburg? And they say, of course. Say, okay, so you think that your car stereo might get stolen, or would you leave your laptop on the seat and not lock the doors? Well, of course not. And yet they don't think they need anyone to protect them from thieves that wear ties and carry briefcases. They're perfectly willing to admit that somebody out there might be dishonest, but then they're not willing to admit that it could be their employer. Or their employer could be completely honest, and he's getting bamboozled. Or somebody's got the ear of your legislator, and they could be a crook. There's such disconnect with the fact that they know they aren't safe from thieves, and yet the thieves could be.
Yeah, I mean, I've just been raging about this all day, and I got to take a break right here. But I could go on about this for days because it infuriates me. That you've got these shill groups like the Citizens Alliance.
So give us something to do. What do we do? Why do we push back? Do you write back an email when you get an email from these people and say, take me off your list, you lying sack of... Or
no, get on their list and poke at them every chance we get.
Okay. And post it on your Facebook page and say, these people are lying.
Absolutely. And tell friends and neighbors. And that's the way the only way they're exposed. Yeah. All of these shill groups. I got to take a break. Right back with the second hour. If you missed any portion of the first hour, TheRickSmithShow.com or Stitcher on your smartphone. Quick break. Right back.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
1,127. That's the final death toll due to the collapse of a garment factory building in Bangladesh. The number of dead and injured makes the tragedy the worst disaster in the history of the garment industry. A global focus has been turned on Bangladesh and worker safety in that country since the incident 3 weeks ago, and reforms are already starting to take place. On Monday, the Bangladesh government announced workers would be allowed to form unions without prior permission from factory owners. Previously, workers could only form a union if a factory owner agreed to the request. The government is also making plans to raise the country's minimum wage for the garment industry. Since the collapse, 22 garment factories have been temporarily shuttered for safety and labor violations. Labor leaders are asking the president to keep his word when it comes to Social Security. Doug Cunningham reports.
When Barack Obama was running for president in 2008, he said that he would not cut Social Security. We want the president to remember what he said and not go back on his word.
U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders speaking at a rally protesting President Obama's proposed Social Security cuts. Sanders delivered 2 million petitions opposed to the cuts to the White House. AFL-CIO says Social Security cuts are unconscionable. SEIU President Mary Kay Henry says her union objects to Obama's proposals to cut Social Security and Medicare benefits. Social Security pays for itself and doesn't add to the national deficit or debt. Any future shortfalls can be eliminated by simply raising the income cap on Social Security taxes. No Social Security tax is paid right now on income above $113,000. Senator Sanders says Obama needs to keep his promise not to cut Social Security, and tens of millions of people must mobilize to stop the cuts.
To rally tens of millions of people who understand that in this country the middle class working families are hurting and we're not going to balance the budget on their back. Our job is to rally those people and give anybody in the Congress who believes in cutting these life-important benefits, we're going to give them a political choice they can't refuse. And that is, if they vote to cut Social Security, they may well not be returning to Washington. Thank you all very much.
Concession workers at AT&T Park in San Francisco have authorized their union to call a strike. The workers are represented by Unite Here Local 2 and have been without a contract for 3 years. The park is home to the San Francisco Giants baseball team.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
They believe in teachers' unions. We believe in teachers.
What they do, they smile in your face.
Big supporter of public education. Big, yes. Not much of a supporter of education. But, you know, I look at this and, you know, what Christie has done in New Jersey, something I think our governor is going to try and do at some point, defer that pension contribution. Just kick it down the road. This way, make the crisis that much worse. Make the problem that much worse. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Our tweet of the day comes from Benjamin Harold. He says, labor concessions done first. Then we'll see what needs to be done in additional funding, according to Senator Mike Fulmer. And, you know, that's been Fulmer's pitch for a while. He is the vice chair of the Education Committee in the Senate here in Pennsylvania, sponsor of a bill that would allow school districts to basically fire teachers, yeah, because we need to cut costs. We're broke, remember? Need to be able to say no. No, right? He says he wants to help the school district be competitive. The costs under control. And how are they going to do that? Of course, by stealing wages and destroying the pensions, which is why I've asked our good friend Jerry Oleksiak, president of the Pennsylvania State Education Association, PSEA, to talk to us. Jerry, thanks for taking time for me.
Thank you. It's good to be with you again, Rick.
Yeah, so I look at this statement by Fulmer that tells me that a crisis that's created there in Philadelphia, but we're not going to really do anything about it until we basically can steal from those teachers.
Well, and you're right. It once again, the people who are doing the work and have paid into their pension and are with the kids every day in the classroom are somehow the ones who are responsible for the situation that we're in. It just makes no sense.
Yeah, well, you see, you got to remember, because I remember the collapse during the Bush years when those cops and those firefighters and those teachers, they crashed our economy. Didn't you know?
We're the ones that did it. I guess while I was in my classroom working with the special needs kids I worked with, part-time I was plotting the downfall of the economy. I don't know when we went from being dedicated public servants to being people that are doing the kinds of things we're being accused of, but... I know our members are committed to our kids. We're committed to our communities. They're working hard every day to do the best they can, despite the outrageous attacks we get from some elements that seem to view us as the bad guy.
Yeah, so let me ask you this. They've created this crisis with this pension, the teacher's pension, the state employees' pension fund. As I understand it, and, you can help me here if I'm wrong, pretty much the last decade, maybe a little longer, we haven't, as a state, made full payments into the pension fund. Is that correct?
That's correct. The state and the school districts, and this was all legal, they took a holiday. They put very little, and in some years almost nothing, into the pension system because the market was doing well. And, of course, during that time, the people who are in the system, see, I'll talk about the teachers, I was paying as a teacher 7.5% of my salary, every one of my paychecks was going into the system. The vast majority of the money in the system comes from the employee contributions and the investment earnings. So, the taxpayers are on the hook for some of it, but not to the degree that you're being told in the media. We've been doing our fair share. We've done it from the very beginning. This is a system that is not in any danger if we take care of it. It survived World War One. It survived the Great Depression. It survived World War II, and it will survive the economic turmoil that we had the past 10 years. But what it will not survive is Governor Corbett's proposal. If the governor gets his way, the system will die a slow, painful death.
And end up costing us much more in the long run. Because, I see this number that they keep throwing out. They keep throwing out $47 billion unfunded mandate. As I understand it, that if everyone retired at this very moment and everyone was fully vested right today and everybody quit their job, the governor, the legislature, all of the teachers, the cops, the firefighters, everybody
right.
retired today, that then yes.
That's what we'll be doing. It's obviously not as simple as your home mortgage, but analogy is there. If you have a $50,000 mortgage or a $20,000 mortgage, whatever you might have, if the bank said to you, well, it's due today, you'd have a big problem. But if you're paying it over 15 or 20 or 30 years, that's a whole different situation. And that's how it is with the system. If we continue to fund it properly, and it does need funding, there's no doubt about that. And Act 120, which was passed in 2010, we'll do that. We'll help do that. But there are other revenue sources available if the governor chooses to go that route.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the drilling money that we're not getting, maybe just a thought, maybe that tax haven that they've got there in Delaware?
Well, my favorite recent one is the corporate jet tax break. I was at a editorial board in York recently. And we were talking about this, and I said to the folks at the newspaper, how many of the kids in York, whose public schools are really struggling right now with funding, how many of those kids own a corporate jet? How many of those kids in Harrisburg or in Chester Upland or in Philadelphia own a corporate jet? We're ready as a society to give tax breaks to those folks, but we aren't ready to fund our schools and our teachers' pension systems the way that we can and we should.
Yeah, but Jerry, at some day I may hit the lottery and I may want a corporate jet.
Well, and you could probably need one with some of the traveling you do, but I joke with our members, Mike Crossley and Dolores McCracken and I, the PSA officers, we travel all over the place, and our pilot tells us that our jet's leaking oil now, so maybe it's a good time for us to buy one. Of course I'm being sarcastic. The corporate jet is me and my car. it makes no sense. It just makes no sense that we live in a society where we're going to continue to not tax Marcellus Shale, we're continue to Delaware loopholes and give tax breaks for corporate jet buyers, but we don't want to take care of our kids and other basic social services that this governor is cutting.
You know, last night I spoke with a woman from Michigan about the Buena Vista school district. I don't know if you've seen this story, but they've got a shortfall, a pretty sizable one, and they just shut the doors. Said, right. Sorry, kids, you're out of luck. We're closing the doors. The teachers actually offered to work for free. Said, we'll continue to the end of the year, please. Don't shut these kids out. The school district, no, we're not going to do it. And the state government said, we're not doing it either.
It's amazing. Well, the governor of Michigan is a kindred spirit to the governor here in Pennsylvania. And, we had a similar situation in Chester Upland where, fortunately, it didn't get quite that far, but the teachers there had already decided that they would work for free if necessary to stay with their kids. You just wonder how long we, as a society, we're going to tolerate this sort of these misplaced priorities that are just going to hurt us in the short run and the long run.
Yeah, I'm hoping not much longer. But I want to go back to this pension thing because this is important to me. Because another part of the governor's plan, and look, the Republicans are masters at divide and conquer, at pitting groups against one another, pitting teachers against firefighters, cops against teachers, all of this pitting against one another. And I look at the division of state workers and the division of by generation, this whole idea that the next generation is going to get one of these crummy 401k type things, they're going to be loaded with fees, and they're going to end up like most of us who have 401ks without much in the way of retirement, and dividing by generation and basically screwing the next generation. To me, that's not what we should be doing as a society.
No, you're right. And one of the things that we are taking very seriously is with our members is educating our younger teachers and letting them know what this is going to mean to them in the long run. And I know when I first started teaching, I was concerned about what am I going to do in my next class? How am I going to handle some of the tough situations I'm facing as a teacher, and with the money I was making, and how am I going to pay the bills that I have to pay? I worked several jobs in my early teaching career. But we need to impress upon our members that you also have you have to look at your own situation, and you have to be ready to think in the long run. And for some of our newer members, that's tough, but we're finding more and more as we educate folks and they understand that, yes, the governor is trying to divide and conquer. He's also trying it with the labor unions. We are working very hard with a lot of labor coalitions to make sure that doesn't happen. We're, PSEA is part of the state unity table with other public sector and some private sector groups. We're part of the CLEAR coalition, which is the coalition of labor engaged for accountable revenue. That's the public sector unions that are pushing the governor and the legislature on looking at revenue sources. And we've had a common voice on not just the pension issue, but on the privatization of the state stores. We're sticking together. We realize that divide and conquer is is the only way that this governor can be successful. And so far we're holding together. We're getting our message out there. I think it was very telling with the press conference that the governor had last week, where, 3 months ago he talks about pension being a priority. It took 3 months to get a sponsor in the House and in the Senate. And you know how this works in Harrisburg. They circulate co-sponsorship memos. And in the House, on any bill, you might get 30, 40, 50 co-sponsors. There are 11, the last we checked, 11 sponsors of the governor's pension proposal in the House, and only about 7 in the Senate. So this is after 3 months of him working on the priority. So there's not a lot of support.
Because it's a bad idea.
It's a bad idea. It's bad policy. It's bad math. It's put aside the policy, as you said before, that the governor's proposal will cost about twice as much as what Act 120 is costing the state right now. And it's unconstitutional in some aspects of it, where the governor wants to go after people who are already in the system. Our courts in Pennsylvania have made it very clear that this is a contract, and you can't just violate the contract when you want to, or if it's it's uncomfortable for you. So the governor's proposal is it's just a mess, and I think more and more as the word is getting out there and people are being educated, they're seeing that.
So what do we do? I mean, this clearly is ideology over reality. What do the taxpayers do? What do I do?
Well, I think you have to let your legislator know that you're seeing through the governor's proposal. You have to give Act 120 the time to work, and this governor has to be challenged on his revenue piece. He's taken the no tax pledge, but that's a very irresponsible way to govern. He's leaving money off the table. The things we talked about before, the corporate stock and franchise tax, the Marcellus Shale, the Medicaid expansion, the federal money for Medicaid that more and more even conservative Republican governors are looking to that as a source of revenue. So there is money out there. The system is working. It needs to be nurtured. It needs to be taken care of. What the governor is planning, as a taxpayer, you need to be upset because it's going to cost you more.
Yeah, going to make it worse.
Cost you less.
Cause a bigger crisis, and
right.
Or the medicine actually kills you.
Right, and he's doing exactly what he complained about being done before, kicking the can down the road. His proposal will lower the payments that districts have to make, but only for about 5 or 6 years, which would, if we have the misfortune of him being reelected, that's about when he's done. Mm-hmm. And then that delay, again, will kick in and people will owe more money. Again, comparing it to your own home, if you have a $100 credit card bill and you don't pay it this month, you can't claim that you saved $100 because you owe $120 next month.
That's
another piece that the governor's trying to do.
Yeah. Again, to me, it's just ideology. Jerry, I appreciate the time. Thanks for the input.
Thank you. It's always good talking to you.
Great. Appreciate it. Jerry Oleksiak, Vice President over at PSEA. Quick break. Right back. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show.
Together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show.
It was 75 years ago that Capital Blue Cross officially opened for business. From our earliest days, serving our customers has been at the heart of everything we do. Together we've lived history and made history. And we're here to help guide you as we navigate a new era in healthcare together. Explore affordable health insurance options and use our free online tools to search for a provider, look up treatment costs, and more. All at capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, celebrating 75 years of service. Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
At last, some excellent economic news for folks long mired in the stagnant labor market. Jobs spring back, exclaimed a typical headline on recent reports that 165,000 private sector jobs were added in April. Wow, the thunderous 3-year boom of prosperity that has rained riches on Wall Street is finally beginning to shower on our streets, right? Well, as dryland farmers can tell you, thunder ain't rain. Read beneath the joyful headlines and you'll see the parched truth. For example, more than a third of working-age Americans are either out of work or have given up finding a job. Also, last month's hiring increase was almost entirely for receptionists, waiters, temp workers, car rental agents, and other low-wage positions. On the other hand, manufacturing, generally the source of good middle-class jobs, did not add workers in April and has cut some 10,000 jobs in the last year. Especially problematic was the continued rise in underemployment, people wanting full-time work but having to take part-time and temporary jobs. Underemployment is also pounding college graduates. While they've been more successful than non-grads at landing jobs, They're not getting jobs that fit their career goals or even require the degrees they spent money and time to obtain. Indeed, many of those rental agents and restaurant employees you encounter hold four-year degrees, forcing everyone else to scramble for the few even lower-paid jobs further down the skill ladder. This is Jim Hightower saying, meanwhile, the next graduating class is about to flood into the labor market with nowhere to go. America's middle class is in a crisis, while our pathetic political leaders pretend that Wall Street's prosperity covers us all. And the corporate media puts little happy face stickers over the dark reality faced by the workaday majority. What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Yes, it is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. You can follow us on Twitter, Twitter.com/RickSmithShow, or follow us, like us on Facebook, Facebook.com/RickSmithShow. So last week we talked about this story of a woman who worked for T-Mobile. Pregnant woman. Pregnant, Pat. Going down, having, as she said, a very, very, very tough pregnancy. You know, my wife was pregnant three times, very small bladder, having to go to the bathroom a lot, like every 15 minutes. It was like clockwork. Evidently, T-Mobile not happy with that. In fact, made her take vacation time to go to the bathroom.
Well, it is quite a holiday.
Vacation time. taking your sick time and your holidays and your vacation in increments of 5 minutes at a time. They fired her for a discrepancy of 12 cents because you can't fire her for being pregnant, so you then do what they do, fire you for something else. Because we live in an at-will nation.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we don't really need a reason to fire you as long as we don't do something stupid like saying, "Ah, you woman," or "you pregnant woman," because 35 years ago they passed the Pregnancy Discrimination Act, which banned discrimination based on pregnancy. So we found a 12-cent discrepancy, so they fired this woman. Well, today, a number of representatives and senators, Senator Bob Casey being one of them, proposed the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act. They want to promote fair treatment of pregnant women who are absolutely workers. A little financial stability with the families. They claim that 3 in 5 pregnant women in this country, 62%, are in the labor force. And that the money that they earn...
I'm shocked that 38% of pregnant women are not in the labor force.
Those are the ones like the woman here got fired.
Right. Well, that's what I'm thinking. Or they're just plain unemployed. But, you know, this makes me laugh, I have to tell you. The only thing now for equality a woman has to do will be get pregnant. Because women aren't treated fairly anyway, pregnant or otherwise.
Point.
So now there's at least a way we can correct that. We can just go get knocked up. Do we have to stay knocked up?
Yeah. No.
The whole time? I mean, can I just be pregnant for like 11 and a half weeks?
No.
And be treated fairly?
Got to have a doctor's note.
I think it went on for about 4 weeks. No, I mean, this is just so stupid. We're still making 70 cents on the dollar. Whether or not we're carrying.
77.
Whether or not we're carrying. Whether or not we're packing, baby.
True.
Right? So now we've got a way. We've got a way to be equal. Son of a gun. All we have to be is 1.5 people.
There you go.
To be equal to one guy.
So much about the family value stuff, though. You know, and I always get a kick out of this. You know, I hear I've got some very socially conservative friends who, you know, it's about the children. We love the children. They're so cute.
The poor are like puppies. They're so cute when they're small.
Yeah. And I said, well, yeah, I mean, you know, because I've got some friends who, you know, it's all about the fetus. And I go, well, what happens when they're born? Who's going to feed them, educate them, health care? Are we going to fund that?
Bootstraps. Babies need to be born with bootstraps.
Is that what it is?
Booty straps.
I thought that's what the umbilical cord was.
They have to pull themselves up by their booty straps. Get a job, you lazy.
Well, what we could do is make women who were poor pump them out so we can give them to the 1%. Because, you know, the women at the very top, they don't have time to actually be pregnant. So, you know, just designer children.
Angelina Jolie, not to go far afield, did you know that every time she has a baby, she has a surgery to remove the skin.
Yeah, well, you mean her breasts? Yeah, she had those removed too.
And the skin on her abdomen. I mean, if you're just a regular woman slugging along, you're making up single families in poverty, most of them headed by women. I mean, life just plain sucks for you if you're a gal trying to make a living, feed your family, take care of them and everything else. And then you're inadequate because you can't afford the 6-week postpartum tummy tuck that you need to get so that you don't gross people out at the beach.
Well, I mean, the part of this, and that's, you know, good luck on that. I'd be happy with paid maternity leave.
Or maternity leave that might last a little longer. Paid maternity leave would be outstanding. My daughter teaches in France. She lives and works in France. And she, you know, France, the country that, when it did AIDS research, gave it to everybody else. You know, people want to talk about freedom fries, but really, when you talk about what France has done for us, it's pretty amazing. But anyway, so... my daughter works there, and she works with other young women who teach, and some of these young women have gotten pregnant. They actually have a person who goes to your house and helps you with the baby.
Yep.
And helps you with the household chores.
Absolutely. I knew that. And for, I guess it's like 2 years.
Yeah, on top of getting universal health care and on top of getting equal pay.
Now, that's just too far. You know, that whole family values thing. We like to talk about family values, but that's, no.
And you get a stipend for having children.
How can we afford that? We're broke. We can't fund education.
One of those Raptor planes, the ones that go down in Maryland on a regular basis, you know, the Raptor that we build, $127 bajillion a piece?
Yeah, we need those.
Yeah, no. We don't need 185 of them.
We need 200 of them.
Well, we'd have 200, but they keep crashing because you've seen that. The oxygen, the pilot doesn't have enough oxygen, yeah. So the plane goes.
That happens.
Talk about a brilliant design, and then Boeing or Lockheed Martin, whoever builds them, just says, oh, sorry about that. Let's build you another one. The pilot ejects. Everything's fine. We just have to charge you another $11 bajillion to build you another one of these planes. So I say 85 of those.
Just 85?
85. These Raptors. They can get anywhere in like 11 seconds.
No.
As long as the pilot stays awake.
But I mean, on a serious note, I mean, look at this. The reality is we hear an awful lot of talk about family values, and we hear an awful lot of talk of, you know, we need to be more family friendly. But policy-wise, you look at the workplace, you look at policy-wise, state, federal level, we're anything but family friendly. The idea that now you've got Republicans who want to do away with part of the Fair Labor Standards Act so that, hey, Pat, you know, you can work 70 hours in a week and not get any overtime. But you can do that at the will of the employer, of course.
And they already can do that, too. If you're working in a capacity at a job and they say, well, we want you to work an extra 12 hours, but you're going to work for the front desk, they can actually get you to work 52 hours for the same employer saying, okay, 40 of your hours was up back filing books. Now the front, you're going to work the front for us, 12 hours on the front desk. That's a different job. I mean,
for a different company. It would have to be done by a different company, by a different subsidiary. You'd have to punch out, punch in.
Okay.
And that's how they get away
with
that. And I know people who that's happened to. And that's legal. It's not right.
And it's amazing. And so that's not good enough. Now they have to do this. You know, I mean, the whole idea of losing overtime.
It's good for profits, Pat.
I want to write a new Ten Commandments.
Hit me.
I want 14, though. Well, first of all, we have to have a commandment that says you cannot abuse children. Did you notice that was missing? We've got you can't like your neighbor's wife and you can't want their TV set.
No.
But beat the living daylights out of their kid or you know.
Spare the rod, spoil the child.
Have sex with your neighbor's child.
Ah, there you go, you and the Catholics.
Okay, and another commandment. Every child has to get at least 3 meals a day. I'm not doing big ones. Like, I'm not even going to do education. Just no child can go hungry. That's carved in the stone.
That's a bit too much to ask for.
I'm even willing to take 888-RICK. What's the number?
520-RICK.
Yeah, there you go. 520-RICK. Call it. What commandment do you want?
There's a good idea.
Yeah, let's make a new 14 commandments. Add a few that were obviously neglected, or you saw one of those Monty Pythons or something. He dropped one of the tablets on the way down the mountain.
15 commandments. 10 commandments.
Was that Mel Brooks? Was that Mel Brooks?
Yeah, Mel Brooks. Oh, good stuff. Let's take a quick break. Right back. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Back after this.
I see the blue on me and you, and I see to my feet.
Yes, it is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
At PSECU, we'd love to help you get the ride you're drawn to. Buy the car you truly want with a loan you can afford. Car, truck, minivan, SUV, scooter, or cycle, new or used, we have a solution for you. Get a rate as low as 1.49 annual percentage rate. Additional rates and terms are available. With PSECU, you can get the ride you truly want.
At PSECU, we've lowered our rates just in time for summer. Get the car you truly want with a 2.99 annual percentage rate. New, used, or simply refinance the car you already have. Choose a payment term of 6 or 7 years, which means more cash in your pocket now. Additional rates and terms are available. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit pseCU.com/life today.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Earth, sky.
An asteroid you might not have known to worry about has been given the all clear.
Astronomers thought that this asteroid had the potential to collide with Earth in the year 2040. But data from the Gemini Observatory in Hawaii has shown that this asteroid will not collide with Earth. This asteroid is called 2011 AG5. It's about 140 meters in diameter, about the length of two American football fields.
Astronomers agree that if this object were to collide with the Earth, it would release several thousand times as much energy as the atomic bombs that ended World War II. Statistically, they say, a body of this size should impact the Earth on average every 10,000 years. But 2011 AG5 will not hit us in 2040.
Why do we hear so much nowadays about asteroids passing near Earth? The fact is that astronomers are now actively looking for asteroids that come near Earth, and that's why they're finding them. A telescopic survey of the sky, called the Mount Lemmon Survey, found asteroid 2011 AG5. This survey is specifically designed to look for asteroids that pass near Earth.
Astronomers found 2011 AG5 early in the year 2011. They had to observe its orbit long enough to be certain of it, to learn that Earth no longer falls along a possible future path for this asteroid in 2040. I'm Emily Howard.
And I'm Michael Brennan. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
In fact, I was in a meeting in Wall Street, Rick, and it was a pretty stunning meeting because we were talking with them about, you know, how can we get more private investment in infrastructure? And they said, pay us. And you have to pay us not just the cost of the capital, like, you know, $60 million to rebuild I-80. You got to pay us for the profit that we would lose by putting that money elsewhere.
Last Thursday morning, everyone knows, you saw the tanker that flipped over, loaded with, 7,500 gallons of diesel fuel, burned, caused the bridge to buckle, caused them to worry that, going to collapse onto 81, cause all kind of catastrophe. So they took the whole part of it out. What I found very interesting is the truck registered to Tumeric Enterprises, LLC, in Carlisle. carried, according to the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, $1 million worth of insurance. So that means, folks, congratulations, you, me, and all the rest of the people here in the Commonwealth, we are going to pay to fix for that. And what I'm expecting is I'm expecting our friends in the GOP to propose a piece of legislation saying, you know, just for this project, because it's an emergency, we need to do away with prevailing wage. I'm expecting it. I mark my words, it's in the works, which is why I've asked our good friend Abe Amoros, Pennsylvania Legislative Director for LIUNA, to come talk to us. Abe, what do you think? Do you see a piece of legislation coming out saying, just this once, Abe, you know, we could do away with prevailing wage for the emergency, if not for the children?
You know, Rick, there are 9 pieces of anti-prevailing wage legislation in the pipeline right now. One of them actually deals with maintenance versus new construction. So I know that somebody's going to get cute on the GOP side and say, we need an exception here. We need to address this issue head on, and we need to fix this thing right away, and we need to save taxpayers' dollars as quickly as possible for the sake of everyone's safety. So you see it coming down the line. You're predicting it correctly. Someone in that legislature in the next 2 weeks is going to come out with a goofy piece of legislation that is going to say, we need this done now, and we need to put prevailing wage aside. Never mind that the men and women that are working on that project deserve to be paid what the market share should be, their fair share, because this is going to be a heavy-duty job. I have driven by that accident on many occasions, and I can tell you it's pretty extensive. And so for anyone to get cute at this point is really sending the wrong message, not just to taxpayers, but to workers as well.
You know what I want to see, Abe? Pretty simply, this idea, and this is what bothers me, because you're right. I'm not a clairvoyant. I just know how these people operate. Let's screw the workers, but not let's hold the company accountable. $1 million of insurance with no rider above and beyond that. So basically you're telling me they can cause an accident in the $5, $10, $20, $100 million range. They're liable for $1 million, and who's stuck paying out the rest? You and me. I'd like to see a piece of legislation that says if you're driving a gas truck down the road, a diesel truck down the road, 7,500 gallons of fuel, maybe, just maybe, you should have to carry a little bit more insurance to cover when this happens.
There is no moral courage on the GOP side, particularly in the House, that would allow for corporations to be responsible. And what a novel concept, Rick, it would be to have a corporation, an entity that was responsible for the accident, actually paying for it. But no, what they want to do is they want to look towards government, they want to look at the taxpayers and say, oh, no, they're the ones that are going to foot this bill. They're the ones that are going to fix this problem. And, you know, leave everybody holding the bag. It's typical GOP, I mean, right out of GOP playbook, Rick. That's exactly what this is. It's so frustrating to watch because you know they're going to use this to their advantage. You know they're going to try to come up with cute solutions to this and really pass the buck and say that the corporates are not responsible for this. And, I mean, 7,500 gallons of diesel fuel, I mean, that's pretty extensive there. And when something like that blows up, someone has to be held accountable, and it should not be John Q. taxpayer. It should not be the workers that have to be responsible for cleaning up this mess. But since we have a corporate-friendly GOP in Pennsylvania, you know exactly where that bill is going to be sent to, and it's going to be sent to us, the taxpayers.
Well, like they said, you can't let a good crisis go to waste. Got to make maximum advantage of it. And I remembered, you know, as I was sitting thinking about this afternoon, I was remembering Katrina, where, you know, after Hurricane Katrina, one of the first things the Bush administration did was say, well, we're going to set away the Fair Labor Standards Act so we don't have to pay overtime or minimum wage. And, of course, getting rid of the prevailing wage as well because, you know, we don't want to have to pay those people actual wages. And let's bring in some people from Honduras, pay them $1 an hour.
That's exactly right. They're going to try to cut as many corners as possible. So then they could have something to hang their hats on in terms of a victory. They want to set a precedent, Rick. Let's be clear about this. They want to take an accident or a tragedy, whatever you want to call it in this instance, and they want to exploit it. And then they want to set precedent. And then they want to point to it at every opportunity that they get and say, look what happened in Harrisburg. If it happens in other parts of the state, those projects should be exempt from prevailing wage standards as well. It's absolutely wrong. It's a slippery slope, but you know it's coming because they're always looking for these types of opportunities to skirt the law and, like you said, screw the workers, and it's absolutely wrong. We need to hold them accountable, and we need to step up and say, no, do not even think of going in that direction because we're going to have to slam you.
You know, for me, it comes down to something very simple. You know, I looked, and the reason I brought up the Bush thing is because, you know, that's the Republican response. Let's see how much we can wring out of the workers, how much we can wring out of the system. So there it goes to the top. I go back to when they had the bridge collapse during the World Series when Clinton was president.
Right.
They fully enforced Davis-Bacon and prevailing wage. And what they found, and there were numerous studies done about this, is what they found is when that money got into the community, into those workers' hands, there was a massive reverberation effect that paid dividends well into the community for small businesses, for the local tax base. And it was actually turned a tragedy, a horrible situation, into something positive. And I look at this as, okay, this is a horrible thing. How do we turn this around? How do we make it beneficial? Because it's got to be done. How do we make it the most beneficial possible? Instead of just putting more money into contractors' hands, how do we broad base this?
That's exactly right, Rick. You know, when you invest properly in a project by paying workers what they are entitled to make based upon their experience, based upon their training, you come out with a quality product that lasts a long time, that comes in under budget in many instances, a project that has no delays, has absolutely no funny business in terms of work stoppages. Everything works in the same direction. Workers are paid a decent wage. The community benefits from a very good project, one that lasts for a very long time. And like you said, those wages are circulated in the community because we all have mortgages, we all have car payments, we all have to buy our kids' school, we all have to buy groceries, and we all go out to eat at restaurants, of course. So all that money is funneled into that community, and it's a simple law of economics. The more you spend in a community, the better off everybody is because those dollars are circulated three or four, maybe even five times. And so denying workers their fair wages is absolutely the wrong thing to do, and what you're doing is you're denying that growth potential in those communities as well. So shortchanging workers right now is just not the way to go about this. And I'm going to be very vigilant, and I'm going to stay on top of this to make sure that, you know, that Labor and Industry Committee, that House Labor and Industry Committee that is dominated 15 to 10 by Republicans, does not come up with any funny language or any funny bills that would skirt these prevailing wages.
Good for you. Let me ask you this. The Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania, the Shill Group, I'm sure you've heard of them,
yeah.
Maybe. You know, one of these right-wing Shill groups came out, and they actually gave you guys a pat on the back, said, you know, Pennsylvania has the highest skilled workforce, you know, welders and pipe fitters and the highest skilled, according to their report. So I guess on one vein they're saying, you know, hey, we've got high-skilled workers, but we should pass right to work so that we could destroy that.
That's exactly right. They want it both ways, Rick. They want to have the best trained, highly skilled workforce out there, but they want everybody to work for 10 bucks an hour with no health benefits and no pension plan. That's exactly what they want to do. They want to get the best of both. They don't understand that investing in the workforce is the very best thing they could be doing to strengthen that workforce, but no. They want as much as possible for very little. It's absolutely insane. And, of course, you're going to have that backhanded compliment. Oh, yeah, you know, we've got the best, highest skilled workforce that we, you know, in America. But they still want to make it a right-to-work state. And why, oh, why, oh, why would we possibly want to be in the same class as Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, some of those very poor states, where the poverty level is just through the roof, where the unemployment rate is higher than the national average? Why would we want to have that race to the bottom that actually not only hurts union workers but non-union workers and entire communities? I'll just never understand that. They think it's cutting costs. They think that it's being passed along. Any savings are going to be passed along to taxpayers. Rick, I don't know of a single contractor who's not going to pocket that difference, man. I just don't.
No, I know. I'm with you. And that's actually been borne out. I mean, you look at Ohio. You look at here in Pennsylvania when Ridge did away with the prevailing wage on school buildings for a very short period of time. They actually had to go back and rebid the contracts because they were much higher than originally thought. I mean, it's mind-blowing.
That's right. And we ought to learn from those mistakes. I mean, those are very bad mistakes. What you're doing is you are wasting more dollars. You're wasting time, obviously. But you're also putting people at risk and peril. And why would you want to put school children at risk? Why would you want to put anybody at risk when it comes to fixing a bridge or a road or a highway? It just doesn't make any sense. But that's not something that they want to hear. The right thinks that it has all the answers as it relates to construction, as it relates to workers, and as it relates to their pals in corporate America and contractors as well.
Well, that's an interesting way of looking at it. I just think they want a desperation class that they can exploit, get what they want, and have no responsibility for. But, you know, that's my view on it.
Well, so, you're not far off. I'll tell you, Rick. You know, there continues to be this class warfare between those that want to build things and the workers that actually do all the heavy lifting, the guys and gals that make their livings with their hands and their backs. They need a break.
Yeah.
And they need this legislature to get off their backs and stop introducing just horrible legislation that really just aims to cut their wages and hurt their families. And they really just take food off their table, Rick. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. I mean, it's very plain, very simple.
Yeah. Last question I've got for you. You know, you look at this. You know, this is going to be an emergency expense, not something you budget for. Where's the money going to come from? And will it be part of the will it be tied up in the transportation bill that not being yet? That I guess we don't expect till what, July?
That's right, Rick. In fact, we're really looking at what I have been told as of today, as a matter of fact, was that the House is not looking at this seriously yet. The Senate is going to push its version out in the first 2 weeks of June, but the House is not serious about it. So when you ask where this money's going to come from, it's got to come from somewhere, and it should be coming out of that doggone transportation bill, Senate Bill 1, but the House of Representatives is not serious about passing this. And now I understand that the Majority Leader, Mike Terzai, wants to tie transportation to the privatization of the state store. So here we go again, playing politics with policy, when what we ought to be doing is fixing our roads and making sure that we have the funds to fix these accidents and to fix these emergencies. But at the same time, we really do need to hold those corporate entities responsible for these things accountable, Rick.
I'm with you. Abe, it's always great talking with you. I appreciate it.
Likewise. Thank you.
Our good friend Abe Amoros, Pennsylvania Legislative Director for LIUNA. Quick break, right back. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
Who cares about the deficit? We want a glorious war. Or was it a shell game from the master of the cloak and dagger?
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Would you dive 14 feet deep in the Susquehanna to keep a bridge safe? Would you spend night after night with prisoners to keep your community safe? Would you spend Christmas Eve plowing snow to keep roads safe? AFSCME members do. Men and women who choose to serve in public service. Mine inspectors, 911 dispatchers, healthcare workers, parole agents. You may not think about them, but no, they're all thinking about you. This message brought to you by AFSCME Council 13.
January of 1964 was a time to remember for many Americans. The Beatles released their first album. New York announced plans to build a World Trade Center. The Surgeon General announced smoking kills, and President Lyndon Johnson declared a war on poverty during his first State of the Union address. January 1964 was also a momentous year for the American truck drivers. The nation's truckers saw the first nationwide labor contract. The National Master Freight Agreement, covering some 450,000 truck drivers employed by 16,000 companies across the country, set a nationwide minimum wage of $3.33 per hour or $23.63 in 2008 dollars, as well as providing health care and retirement benefits for all its members. The 1964 National Master Freight Agreement set a nationwide standard for working conditions, giving drivers a voice on the job and the power to stand up to abusive treatment and eventually the ability to refuse to drive equipment the driver deemed unsafe. Led by labor visionary James R. Hoffa, this victory was the crowning achievement of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters as one of America's most influential unions. This landmark agreement created a framework for all national contracts to follow. Jimmy Hoffa, the man who famously quipped, "I may have many faults, being wrong is not one of them," was certainly right about the benefits, power, and influence of such a national agreement for workers, both union and non-union. Wages and benefits earned by truck drivers brought millions of hardworking men and women solidly into the middle class by rewarding hard work with a fair day's pay for a fair day's work. For generations, the National Master Freight Agreement served as the industry standard for all truck drivers, raising wages, improving benefits, and providing a safer workplace for drivers and the motoring public. Unfortunately, since the 1980 passage of trucking deregulation, the industry has resorted to cutthroat competition based on who is willing to work for less. In this environment, the National Master Freight Agreement has lost some of its power in lifting truck drivers out of low wage, no benefit, and hazardous conditions. Currently, many non-union truck drivers are earning at or near poverty wages while pushing legal limits. For many truckers, their pay is solely determined by the number of miles they drive. Breakdowns, time spent waiting to be loaded and unloaded, and other delays are shouldered by the driver, in most cases without compensation. 1964 and the years that followed has shown what can be accomplished by workers standing together. Perhaps the future will see resurgence in worker solidarity and the reemergence of a fair day's work, a fair day's pay. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment is brought to you by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, go to www.therickSmithShow.com.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Rick 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website, therickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, download the podcast there at the website or get the Stitcher app on the smartphone. Take the program on the go. You can also follow us at Twitter, twitter.com/RickSmithShow, or like us on Facebook, facebook.com/RickSmithShow. Let's go to the phones. I got Jason on line one. How are you doing tonight, Jason?
Hey, Rick. How you doing?
Good. What's on your mind?
So I got a little fired up by your talk earlier about the Citizens Alliance for Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
So I went on Twitter and I found them, and I told them I was laughing at them.
Good for you.
Yeah. Because of what you were saying on the air, and then so they responded.
Nice.
And they got, it's been like a little Twitter battle going on there, and they're saying, you know, they're not about economic, they're not about corporatism, they're about economic freedom.
Uh-huh, yeah, yeah. You know, that's exactly the exact language they used over 100 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, like, so I'm trying to figure out, what does economic freedom mean to them?
You know, economic freedom was basically the Alex Haley story, too. Remember Roots?
Mm-hmm.
All those slaves and all that economic freedom. I mean, they all had a place to live. They all had a little bit of food.
Yeah, but we've learned from that. We don't own people anymore. It's too expensive to own them because you have to give them food and a place to live. It's much cheaper to lease them for a little bit, and then they have to feed and take care of themselves. And they get sick, screw them, let them die.
Especially if they don't get health care until they get to 65, because you can make them kick the bucket way before then. But no, I mean, this economic freedom is – did you tweet back and to ask them – exactly how much freedom that
you're supposed
to have for 7 1/4 an hour?
They said that I should go read some intro to economic books, and then they'd be happy to talk to me again.
Oh, my God. How condescending. Thank you for treating me like I'm stupid. By the way, Ayn Rand is a bad, bad person, and you need to read something else. That's what you tweet back.
Oh, they're getting it. Everyone's ganging up on them now.
Oh, good.
Yeah, but no, I mean, I was just this whole idea of, you know, free market and all that stuff, you know, it just never gets old. But, I mean, what does that mean? I mean, like, what does that really mean to them? Does it mean, like,
a company
can do whatever they want?
Can you tweet back and ask them what they do for a living?
They're shills.
No, whoever this person, though, is, I'd like to know what they're going to come up with for an answer.
I think he said they work for the Citizens Alliance, right?
Yeah.
So that's their full-time job?
Yeah. They're shills.
Their full-time job is basically
tweeting. Pimping. Yes.
Pimping. No, yeah. they're whoring out somebody else to get a lousy paycheck and to be used by the man, and so they're just a bunch of pimps.
No, the pimp is the Citizens Alliance.
That's
they're
what
the
I'm
other
saying.
End of it.
Oh, no. See, I still think these guys are pimps.
Okay.
Because they're trying to pimp this fellow, right? What's your name again, sir?
Jason.
Jason.
Yeah, they're trying to pimp you, Jason. They're trying to get you over there to, like, sell yourself really cheap.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, the free market. I get to work, you know, I take my whatever they give me, and I'm happy. I should be happy with it.
So you're free to be hungry. You're free to work in horrible conditions, and you're free to have no health care. And don't you love all that freedom?
I mean, I've never felt more free before in my life.
Man, you ought to be free to have your own radio show.
Nice job, Jason. I appreciate it, man. Keep it up.
No problem.
Keep it up.
Hey, maybe Jason wants to work at Disney.
There you go.
Well, dude, we probably lost him. But wealthy moms, rich Manhattan moms hire handicapped tour guides so their kids can cut the lines at Disney World.
Yeah, well, I took my kids to Disney over Christmas.
Did you drool?
Did I what?
Drool?
No.
To get them up in line?
No, I would never do that.
Okay.
But I could have swore, and, you know, when I saw this story of these wealthy women going, I'm just too good to stand in line, I actually thought that there were people there doing that because you would see somebody and you go, well, you know, I don't know.
The story's from, of all places, the New York Post, who you would think would be in favor of this behavior.
Well.
They said they are the one percenters who are 100% despicable.
Really? See, now I think they would take a position of, well, at least now the disabled person now has a job, and they're a part of the free market.
Oh my God.
They could pimp their disability.
They hire disabled people to pose as family members.
Now, are they in the pictures?
The disabled in the pictures.
By the castle with the smiling kids and the little Tinkerbell in the hand thing, is the disabled person there with them?
I guess you'd have to, right? They say, hi, this is Jeeves. We hired him to take the black market Disney guides get $130 an hour.
Wow.
Or $1,040 for an 8-hour day. Can you imagine paying $1,000 a day to get your kid so they can stand in line at Disney quickly, but you're not willing to say everybody deserves to make $12 an hour or $15 an hour? It's $1,000 a day to take care of your kid, but everybody else's kid, their parents don't even have $1,000 to live on in a month.
Well, I'm sure the Citizens Alliance would be all in favor. That's the free market, pal.
My daughter waited 1 minute to get on It's a Small World.
Well,
a wrist-opening event, if you're asking me. That game.
Nobody rides It's a Small World anymore.
The other kids had to wait 2.5 hours, crowed one mom, who hired a disabled guide through Dream Tours Florida.
That's despicable. You can't go
to Disney without a tour concierge, she sniffed. And this is how the 1% do Disney.
Man, I got it all wrong. I keep saying I'm on the wrong side of all of this. I should be a right-wing shill like the Citizens of Alliance, where I can make a boatload of money and then take my kids to Disney and not have to wait in line. Beautiful stuff. Quick break. Right back with Hour 3. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Exposing that free trade is never free. The Rick Smith Show.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
1,127. That's the final death toll due to the collapse of a garment factory building in Bangladesh. The number of dead and injured makes the tragedy the worst disaster in the history of the garment industry. A global focus has been turned on Bangladesh and worker safety in that country since the incident 3 weeks ago, and reforms are already starting to take place. On Monday, the Bangladesh government announced workers would be allowed to form unions without prior permission from factory owners. Previously, workers could only form a union if a factory owner agreed to the request. The government is also making plans to raise the country's minimum wage for the garment industry. Since the collapse, 22 garment factories have been temporarily shuttered for safety and labor violations. Labor leaders are asking the president to keep his word when it comes to Social Security. Doug Cunningham reports.
When Barack Obama was running for president in 2008, he said that he would not cut Social Security. We want the president to remember what he said and not go back on his word.
U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders speaking at a rally protesting President Obama's proposed Social Security cuts. Sanders delivered 2 million petitions opposed to the cuts to the White House. AFL-CIO says Social Security cuts are unconscionable. SEIU President Mary Kay Henry says her union objects to Obama's proposals to cut Social Security and Medicare benefits. Social Security pays for itself and doesn't add to the national deficit or debt. Any future shortfalls can be eliminated by simply raising the income cap on Social Security taxes. No Social Security tax is paid right now on income above $113,000. Senator Sanders says Obama needs to keep his promise not to cut Social Security, and tens of millions of people must mobilize to stop the cuts.
To rally tens of millions of people who understand that in this country the middle class working families are hurting and we're not going to balance the budget on their backs. Our job is to rally those people and give anybody in the Congress who believes in cutting these life important benefits, we're going to give them a political choice they can't refuse. And that is, if they vote to cut Social Security, they may well not be returning to Washington. Thank you all very much.
Concession workers at AT&T Park in San Francisco have authorized their union to call a strike. The workers are represented by Unite Here Local 2 and have been without a contract for 3 years. The park is home to the San Francisco Giants baseball team.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The man who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
At every trough you stop to feed, with your arrogance, your ignorance, and greed. Now here come the cuts and redundancy, through the absolute indifference, the avarice, incompetence, your arrogance, your ignorance, your greed.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, therickSmithShow.com. So the Treasurer and Deputy Prime Minister of Australia, a guy named Wayne Swan, he announced, and I love this quote, this quote. He says, to those who would take us down the European road of savage austerity, I say the social destruction that comes from cutting too hard, too much, too fast is not the Australian way. He says the alternative to cutting to the bone puts Australian jobs and our economy at risk. Maybe we could get him to come to this side of the pond and tell these idiots we've got in Washington, austerity is the death knell of all of us. And we've got the experiment going on in the UK right now. We've got real problems. What we need money, and we've got money. We just need to know how to go and get it. And there's a piece of legislation, H.R. 1579, the Inclusive Prosperity Act, or as you know, some people are calling it, the Robin Hood tax, which I'm all in favor of, being introduced, which is why I've asked Tim Carpenter, National Director of Progressive Democrats for America, to come talk to us. Tim, thanks for taking time for me.
Thanks so much for having us and the opportunity.
So walk me through this Inclusive Prosperity Act, H.R. 1579. What is it?
It's a really important piece of legislation that we hope that many of the listeners will become a part of. It was introduced last session. Congressman Keith Ellison has reintroduced it as he began the program, and we just heard so eloquently from Bernie Sanders. As the president continues to move us down this false debate of austerity versus prosperity, we can't cut our way out of this. We've got to start with a real revenue stream and begin to put that money back into helping the middle class. And we need to turn to punish Wall Street in some sense, but have Wall Street pay their fair share. And what this does, as you said, it's known as the Robin Hood tax or the speculation tax. It's a small tax on Wall Streeters who are benefiting from the quick exchanges that take place on the stock market, and to redirect that money back here into the economy. The legislation has been reintroduced by Keith Ellison, and tomorrow is a critical day, just as Social Security is under attack, to call our members of Congress and say, let's stop this delusion and this argument that we need to cut. Social Security is falling. Let's get on with the revenue stream. Let's move on with the Robin Hood tax. We can talk about a carbon tax. We need a revenue stream, and that's what will begin that process with Keith Ellison. So tomorrow, folks are being asked to call their members of Congress to support that bill, to become a co-sponsor and join with Keith Ellison in this effort to move this bill forward.
Yeah, so explain this Robin Hood tax. You know, I've talked about it in the past, but explain it in your world.
Well, right now, as many people know, when the Bush administration was in its final hours and called on those of us in the middle class to really bail out Wall Street, unfortunately, they got their blank check, and Wall Street has benefited thus far from the taxpayers and from what has happened in Washington now through the 4 years of the Obama administration. And what this is an attempt to do, what this particular bill is patterned after what's going on in many of the European nations right now, is to put a tax on Wall Street, a small tax on the speculative money that's being spent on the transactions that take place that won't affect you and I or our, you know, K-40s or any of those things. This is for the high-end folks that are benefiting with the speculative profiting that's going on in Wall Street. It's to put a small tax on them, 0.05%. And what that means in real terms, Richard, for us and for the listeners tonight, is to think about what would happen tomorrow if we had a revenue stream of, let's say, $300 billion or $350 billion that we could direct towards job stimulus, direct towards eradication, the final steps of AIDS, to put into really moving us from a green economy to putting it into stimulating green jobs. So what this is, a tax on the Wall Street speculators to take that money, to have Congress take that money, create a revenue stream, and the legislation specifically, and that's what's important about it, encourage folks to read it, directs where that money can go. And that's why tomorrow, activists from the environmental movement, from the labor movement, from the peace and justice movement, will all be in their district offices in Congress, asking members of Congress to mount the offense, as we say, and move away from the defense. And this bill is that first step in doing that.
Let me ask you this, you know, in where the money can and cannot go, I saw this report that high-frequency traders, these big high-frequency trading firms, their contributions to campaigns went up almost 700% since 2008. Because, you know, we've got to make sure we protect our speculative trading, and especially with these supercomputers. How much of that would go in looking at that?
Well, it depends on the percentage. The Ellison bill, the one that we're supporting tonight and talking about, is 0.05%. Most economists tell us that we could generate anywhere from $300 to $350 billion. And it's really important what you underscored. This last election cycle, we were awash in special interest money because of the Citizens United decision and the unregulated amounts of special interest money. We saw billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars being poured into this election process. So we need to begin to level the process so that our voices that can be heard. So one way we can do that outside of the electoral arena is to bring some of that money back into the economy that will benefit us. And then at the same time, we have many things to do in order to write this up. One is to overturn Citizens United, pass this legislation. And the other piece tomorrow I do want to share with listeners as we continue to move out on this recipe and calling your members of Congress is this whole debate on Social Security. We began with the what you just played, the rally that Senator Sanders did. In addition tomorrow to asking your members of Congress to support this effort through what we're calling a Robin Hood tax, it's easier to understand it, is to also let your member of Congress know, as Bernie Sanders said, do not touch Social Security. There are 41 members of Congress tonight, the same members that are working on this effort on the Robin Hood tax, that have said, line in the sand, This is a fight for the heart and soul of our party. If you're not going to protect Social Security and move towards the Robin Hood tax,
yep,
then we need to pink slip them. So that's part of the discussion tonight as well.
I'm with you. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're with Tim Carpenter, National Director of Progressive Democrats for America. Their website, pdamerica.org. We've got a link at therickSmithShow.com. I'm sitting here with my good friend Pat LaMarche. You got a question for Tim?
Yeah, Tim, now you and I have been friends since I ran for vice president back in 2004.
Hey,
how
good
are
evening.
You?
Yeah, great. Good to hear your voice, Pat. How are
great
you tonight?
Great to talk to you, too. I'm great. Tim, you are the most tireless, hardest working, most fabulous guy fighting the good fight. And how much longer is progressive Democrats' voice going to be ignored by the power elite in the Democratic Party?
Well, first of all, Pat, thanks for the introduction. That's a good question, Pat. We've been at it for some time.
Oh,
we have no illusions tonight or tomorrow that we'll pass the Robin Hood tax. We have no illusions of Barack Obama in this end of his administration to becoming the progressive. We hope at some level we were realistic when he was running for office. He's no progressive. What our fight, Pat, is until we can level the playing field, we want to work with the Green Party, Democratic Socialists, whoever, on the outside piece. We work both inside and outside. PDA is unique in that way. We are not the Democratic Party. We are the insurgency.
Absolutely.
We work inside the party as well as outside the party. So where we can align ourselves with those that want to work inside the party, whether it be Keith Ellison or Raul Grijalva, the co-chairs of the Progressive Caucus, the 72 members that stood up, 84 that voted for a carbon tax and for the Robin Hood tax this last cycle, those are the folks we fight for. That's our fight inside the party. And then we fight with our fellow brothers and sisters from the Green Party and other on the outside. We don't want to get into a circular fighting squad or argue on that 5 or 10% electorally where we may disagree. We want to stay focused on those pieces where we do agree. But for some of us, as I said, until we level the playing field, until we get public financing, until we get proportional representation, until we can have a fair election in this country, the fight's inside the Democratic Party. I'll leave with Jim Hightower. He's on our National Advisory Board. Many of the listeners certainly know Jim, former agricultural producer. We argue that we don't need a third party. We need a second party, and we believe the Democratic Party still can be that party, and that's where our fight is tonight and continues to be. In addition to, as we talked tonight already about what we're doing, is H.R. 676. As the
Absolutely.
Affordable Care Act is coming under attack and as the Republicans are attacking it, we all know that 27 million Americans, even if the Affordable Care Act was put into place, would be without insurance. More people are dying in emergency rooms. We need single payer. So, Pat, join us on H.R. 676. Get those co-sponsors. Fight there and fight at the state level.
And that, of course, Congressman Conyers has put H.R. 676 forward every 2 years for forever. But really, I think, and you and I are on the exact same side on this, which is we don't care who gets the win as long as we get the win, and we wrestle power away from this stranglehold that's on the average American. And so how do they do that? I know you're saying call your congresspeople. What else is there? What else is that? And the 99%ers? I mean, really, you have been fighting this fight for so long. The occupation, all that stuff that gave us all hope. What do we do?
Well, hope, you know, keep hope alive, as Reverend Jackson would say. What we need to do, and I would argue tonight, Pat, is find the area. We're all busy in our daily lives. We all want to find something that is of value, and where do we put our political energy and time? Whether it be in overturning Citizens United, David Cobb was leading that effort, a citizen's effort to put initiatives on state ballots and to put advisory votes out, to talk about overturning Citizens United, the unregulation of corporate money that allows, as we said when we began this conversation tonight, this unprecedented amount of money. Put your energy there. If your energy is in where many of us in PDA is about, it's redirecting military spending, Pentagon waste. We talk about health care, not warfare. I mean, here we are tonight, Pat, talking about, quote unquote, the budget crisis and having to cut, yet we're spending $1 million per soldier still in Afghanistan. So there's so many places we can put our energy. So this call tonight, a simple thing that all of us can do is to pick up the phone, call your member of Congress, or those of you that are inspired tonight, hopefully, go to your member of Congress office. We're going to be in 210 offices tomorrow knocking on those doors. Last month we were at 100. The month before that we were at 75. Our numbers are growing. So I remain committed, Pat, as I did, that it will take a citizens' movement both inside and outside the political process. And we know at the end of the day, no political party is going to bring this about. It's going to be the social movements. We are all part of a larger social movement. And the work that we do, everything that we do begins in the streets and ends in the halls of Congress. So we've got to do it all. And we've got to figure out where best we can be part of that arc.
And the other part of it is go to their district offices especially. I would love to see people lining up at the district offices. You're not going to make it to D.C. Get to those district offices. Cause a ruckus there.
Well, that's the long-term goal. That's what we want to talk about tonight. So we drop this letter tomorrow, and then so be it, as you said. Rick, but what if 30 people in the district then called an hour later and said, hey, I understand the Progressive Democrats of America just dropped off a letter. Will the Congress member be co-sponsoring that legislation, whether it be the Robin Hood tax or single payer? What if we have that kind of calibration tomorrow and did that? And what if the next month, as you said, we began the process that we were in 400 congressional offices? Or what would happen if the Occupy movement, who didn't want to work on the inside, simply began to occupy those district offices? I think we could tip the scales, and that's kind of the energy we hope to put in place tonight, tomorrow, and continue to be a part of.
I'm looking forward to it. Tim, I appreciate the time, the thoughts. We're working with you. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much. And again, Pat, great to hear you tonight. Thanks so much, you guys. Good luck. Thank you.
Tim Carpenter, National Director of Progressive Democrats for America, PDA America, PDAmerica.org. We've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Back with your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
At last, some excellent economic news for folks long mired in the stagnant labor market. Jobs spring back, exclaimed a typical headline on recent reports that 165,000 private sector jobs were added in April. Wow, the thunderous three-year boom of prosperity that has rained riches on Wall Street is finally beginning to shower on our streets, right? Well, as dryland farmers can tell you, thunder ain't rain. Read beneath the joyful headlines and you'll see the parched truth. For example, more than a third of working-age Americans are either out of work or have given up finding a job. Also, last month's hiring increase was almost entirely for receptionists, waiters, temp workers, car rental agents, and other low-wage positions. On the other hand, manufacturing, generally the source of good middle-class jobs, did not add workers in April and has cut some 10,000 jobs in the last year. Especially problematic was the continued rise in underemployment, people wanting full-time work but having to take part-time and temporary jobs. Underemployment is also pounding college graduates. While they've been more successful than non-grads at landing jobs, they're not getting jobs that fit their career goals or even require the degrees they spent money and time to obtain. Indeed, many of those rental agents and restaurant employees you encounter hold four-year degrees, forcing everyone else to scramble for the few even lower-paid jobs further down the skill ladder. This is Jim Hightower saying, meanwhile, the next graduating class is about to flood into the labor market with nowhere to go. America's middle class is in a crisis, while our pathetic political leaders pretend that Wall Street's prosperity covers us all, and the corporate media puts little happy face stickers over the dark reality faced by the workaday majority.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Sanity. For a change, the Rick Smith Show.
Rick 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick@thericksmithshow.com. More fun with gun stuff. You know, you saw the shooting on Mother's Day, right? You know, 19 people
19
shot.
People, right.
You go. No, I guess they now have a suspect, right? Some 19-year-old kid. Maybe they're going to run after because he looks like it.
What is he, Adele? He shoots 19 people because he's 19. Remember Adele named her album 19 and then 21 when she turned 21.
And also yesterday, more fun with guns, you know, 8:34 Monday morning, Winchester Police Department there in Virginia said, well, there was an incident on a school bus. You know, someone, you know, there was some disorderly stuff going on, and the gun just went off.
Did anyone get hit?
No, we got hit.
Okay.
Just a middle school bus. And I got to be honest with you, as a parent, not fond of people riding on my middle school kid's bus with a gun.
With a gun. Yeah, no. In middle school is really tough enough without having guns at it. But, I mean, of all places, Aurora, Colorado, where they had the movie shooting last July, a school employee at Aurora, Colorado, that's not a Rangeview High School, discharged his weapon into a student. School employee and the student knew each other. The employee works a second job as an armed security officer and was giving the student a ride home. While moving his gun to the glove box of the car, the firearm went off. Shot the student. Suffered an injury to his leg, but is expected to survive.
Just went off. It just happened.
The guy's an armed guard. That's what he does for a living.
Yeah.
Now, we want people who don't do that for a living to be pack and eat.
Look, I had the ability to carry a gun, too, as a Barney Fife runner cop. I don't want to be responsible anywhere near holding a gun. And they said, here, we'll pay you an extra 50 cents an hour if you carry a gun. No, thank you.
I got my guns. Did you tell him that? Do a little flexing.
These are the only guns I need.
No, but the gun just went off. And you know, it goes into that, you know, gun. People don't kill people. People don't shoot people. The gun did it all by itself, mind of its own.
Sunday, a 4-year-old accidentally shot an 11-year-old in Florida. Florida.
Yeah.
However you say that word. 24-year-old in Texas was playing with a gun and shot a 14-year-old. You know, the one thing about all these guns going off and shooting people is I don't think so many of them are accidents. I think because this is sort of the fervor now, it's being used as an accident.
So you're thinking that, you know, hey.
People are shooting people. And it's a lot less of an accident than people say it is. But now that's just such a catchphrase for I think I'm about to get away with shooting somebody.
Is that the case? Or is it that these things have always been going on and nobody's been paying attention to it? Because, you know, I remember as a kid, you know, the kid who looked into the little round hole and pulled the trigger, he didn't reproduce. Which at the time I was okay with. Thin the herd and keep the stupid people away.
But you're a big fan of the Darwin Awards.
No, I mean, you know, look.
Right. No, I don't think that this has been happening all along, and it certainly doesn't happen anywhere else in the world.
Because they don't have the concentration of guns that we have.
No, that's not true. You saw Fahrenheit 9-1-1, didn't you? Michael Moore's program about Columbine and the shootings and NRA and Charlton Heston and and they have as many guns in Canada. Households have guns in Canada that nobody shoots them. Unless they're like shooting a deer, which people say is the intention. The number of homes having guns in the United States has decreased by 40% since the 1970s. But the number of guns has gone up like 1,000 times. Because people have arsenals.
Arsenals, yeah.
And then everybody
says, Obama's stealing the bullets. They're actually proposing legislation.
Have you seen that Chris Rock thing? The guns should be free, the bullets should be $5,000, yeah.
Because you really got to be mad at somebody to shoot them. No, but you know, I look at this whole thing with guns, and I think I have a fairly unique perspective because I grew up as a kid in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland, and anytime I saw someone who had a gun, they were hunting, yes, but not deer. So I've actually seen people shot. It's not like the movies where and you fall over and you die. No, there's a lot of screaming and pain.
Yeah, it's a bad thing.
But now I'm moving into an area where I understand it's part of the culture, passed on one generation to the next, done semi-responsibly. I'm okay with. Where I grew up originally, I didn't want anybody having guns, not even the cops, because, well, they couldn't shoot straight either.
Well, there is a problem with that, too. But I grew up in a housing project in Providence, Rhode Island. That's where I started. In fact, when I was running for vice president, I went back there. And the people I was growing up with, they all still live there. You know, they all still live there. And it's just a violent, incredibly violent place. But I think the problem with the United States is if 11,000 people or 18,000 people are going to die from gun violence this year, with the exception of a college campus, they're all going to be people from the same neighborhood. And so we don't care.
Now, I go back to what I said yesterday about the shooting on Mother's Day. You know, to me, it's a poverty issue. Yeah. You know, you don't have the high concentration of poverty, the high number of people living in poverty. You give them opportunity. You give them the ability to lift themselves up and to do better through their work. I think a lot of these problems go away.
Yeah. I think a lot of these problems go away if...
You take the gun away.
Yeah. Well, no, I don't... I'm not a big Second Amendment... I think background checks are important. I think it's real important. I mean, why Ronald Reagan wasn't in favor of a background check when the guy that shot him had serious mental illness. You know, I mean, I don't understand why this is such a problem. And I do know that they all think, oh, my God, I have to have my gun because I have to might have to go shoot the lady at motor vehicle. You know, I have to be able to kill my government at the drop of a hat. That's why I have to keep my guns. If that's your form of patriotism, you are the laziest patriot I've ever heard of. Run for office, vote, carry a sign, march in a parade, do something for your government short of having to kill the lady at motor vehicle. That's why people want their gun.
No, see, most of my friends, they want most of my friends, they just want somebody to break into their house.
So they can shoot their gun?
Yes, and I've sat through probably one of the most pornographic descriptions of someone breaking into someone's house and this guy taking out his big and sticking it to him. And you go, the detail and the thought that went into this tale, you know, is nothing short of pornographic. And I remember it vividly.
There's a great public service announcement that was made for the United Kingdom, and it showed a guy, you know, with his gun, and he hears a noise, and he discharges his weapon in the direction of the noise, and he kills his son who forgot his key. Right? This is the stuff that happens all the time. People who keep a gun at home, for the most part, kill themselves or somebody else that they care about, assuming they care about themselves. And otherwise, it's street violence. And it's not street violence the average middle-aged white woman's going to run into. It's street violence where a whole bunch of, as you said, people in poverty are going to end up killing each other. And because of that, better they should die and decrease the surplus population. It saves us starving them to death. This way we don't have to starve them to death or have their educations be so poor that they starve themselves to death.
Wow. You sound harsh. You could work for the Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania.
I'm a tinge cynical, huh?
Decrease the surplus population?
That's the point, isn't it?
Let the one congressman, the guy running for Congress there in South Carolina. My grandmammy told you, don't feed them dogs, because they'll just come back and reproduce.
I would love to say that to some of these people. I would love to say, you know, I realize that you don't care a whole heck of a lot about veterans coming back to this country and killing themselves, because that way you don't have to worry about veterans benefits.
Yeah, and you hear an awful lot about this family value stuff, and we talked a little bit earlier about it. And, of course, if you missed any portion of the program, thericksmithshow.com is where you get the podcast, or Stitcher on your smartphone. The sequester, this screwquester that they've saddled on us, they're going to cut $85 billion from subsidies that are going to help pregnant women and help newborns, and, you know, the family value stuff, the things that I think are important. You're talking about 600,000 pregnant women, newborns, and infants this year. And you go, again, you know, where's this family value stuff? Where's this?
And in the general scheme of spending, it's a pittance. I mean, when you're talking about cutting, and then you end up with these 11,000 babies that die the day that they're born, the statistic you were talking about last week. They die the day they're born more than all the other industrialized nations combined. Happens in the United States. That's what you told me last week.
Yep.
That's what happens when you don't feed the pregnant women.
Or let them go to the bathroom.
Yeah, or let them go to the bathroom. Or they explode. But it's so ridiculous that this is, it's a pittance for the amount of money we spend. Too big to fail. You know what's too big to fail? Our youth. So let's wipe out their school debt.
There you go.
That would be an economic engine like crazy. If all of our kids, my kids, Brett doesn't have kids, being a young person with student loans, if they all could just start spending money on something in the economy instead of giving it to the ridiculous bankers that George W. Bush empowered to, if you read the Sally Mae stuff, they can change the terms of your student loan without telling you. And the average kid going to school just signs it. Or their parent co-signs it. Little Billy's got to get his money for his tuition. Oh, okay. No, they can change the terms. They can change how much they charge you for interest. They can say it's a no penalty for early payment loan and then change it and give you a penalty.
And what's wrong with that? That's good American capitalism. It's good for business.
Oh, breaks my heart. Oh, well, I forgot I don't have one. Oh, well.
See, you're going to have to learn. See, you can't go in the new America.
I know.
And
I don't
give a rat's
in.
Ass about anybody else.
Yeah. I know. I've completely messed it all up.
Yeah.
But I'm grateful I finally have a place to go, which is the Rick Smith Show.
There you go. Oh, yeah. We're happy to have you. And looking forward to our trip.
I know. I'm so excited.
I'm so looking forward to going down the road and exploring all these places. And, you know, as I'm looking at you brought up Columbine a moment ago. And Aurora. And I thought of Columbine because we're going to be going to Columbine. Not because of the shooting, but because you had, well, there was a shooting in Columbine.
Oh, there was, yeah.
The mine workers were trying to organize and say, hey, we want a little bit of something. Send in the National Guard. Shoot them.
Why is the National Guard loading their weapons to use on American citizens?
Business.
You know,
it's good for business.
It's against the Constitution of the United States.
Yeah, well.
These people love the Constitution. They think it's written with invisible ink. The rest of us can still read it.
See, you just don't interpret it right.
No standing army shall be used against the citizenry of the Article 7 or something.
It's the National Guard. It's not a standing army.
Oh, but they get activated.
Well, you know. We
federalized.
Want,
that's
we want
the word.
Kate and Edith, too.
Oh, okay.
We
have cake?
Well,
no, not tonight. Yeah, maybe
or Kate and Edith. Either way.
Oh, Kate and Edith, too.
Yeah, you remember the Blues Brothers movie? One of my favorite movies of all time. As the woman from the Blues Brothers said, we've got both kind. We got country and western. One of my favorites. I don't know. Here, because I was looking for the clip.
Oh, do you have it?
Yeah, well, I did, but it's not on, and it's...
Oh, we got both kinds. We got country and western.
There you go. All that for that. Quick break, right back. Stick around.
Back to America. Rick Smith.
Would you dive 14 feet deep in the Susquehanna to keep a bridge safe? Would you spend night after night with prisoners to keep your community safe? Would you spend Christmas Eve plowing snow to keep roads safe? AFSCME members do. Men and women who choose to serve in public service. Mine inspectors, 911 dispatchers, healthcare workers, parole agents. You may not think about them, but no, they're all thinking about you. This message brought to you by AFSCME Council 13.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Most important issues of the day. This is The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Also, Facebook.com/RickSmithShow. You can like us there or follow us on Twitter at Twitter.com/RickSmithShow. It looks like the Clinton years almost again with all of the calls for investigations, all of the, we need independent counsel, we need all of, going to be interesting. Here to talk a little bit about it, I've got Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Ellen, thanks for taking time for me.
Yes. Well, let me tell you something. It's not pretty out there, and I don't think the Obama administration is helping themselves very much.
No. I look at this, and all of this, it seems to me that they're trying to just poo-poo it away. Nothing to see here. Move along. Kind of like Barb Brady on South Park.
That's right. And the problem is that you have an administration that has not done a very good job on press. My view is, given what they did with the Associated Press, is they ought to hire the president of AP to be their press secretary.
Well, I mean, they, look, at the end of it, I'm furious about that. If what I'm reading is true, we should all be ticked off about it.
Well, we should be. And the problem is that there's, you know, the Benghazi talking points is one thing. It is true that the Republicans are making a big deal out of it. On the other hand, the administration could have taken care of their problems very simply by saying, you know what, some of people in the administration believe this is reaction to a YouTube videotape. Some people believe that this was associated with Al-Qaeda. We will find out.
Right. And
that's
know,
all they needed to say.
Yeah, and part of me goes, you know, had they kept their mouth shut for a couple more hours and not rushed to come out with a statement, I think they would have been better off.
Yes, absolutely. But, again, I'm not going to give this place, this administration kudos for handling press right. I got to tell you, sometimes I think the Bushies did a much better job at handling press. And
sure,
one of the
did.
Things the Bushies did.
Sure they did, because they had their own press conferences. They put their own people in the audience to ask their own questions.
Well, they put a couple of their own people, but they really didn't affect the White House press corps. And, you know, I've been there since 93. But I will tell you this. The one way the Bush people won their way to all of our hearts, they were on time. If they said something was going to start at 1:45, it did not start at 2:30, and people were able to plan. And believe it or not, those little things make a big difference in people's lives and their frustration levels.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they're trying to poo-poo this away, and I think it's going to backfire in a big way.
I don't disagree, and I think that's a big problem.
And, you know, you look at this IRS thing, and I guess the question I have with the IRS thing that's come up is, you know, is this their doing, or is this something that's been in place for several years? Because, you know, I heard those exact same things from progressive groups during the Bush years that, hey, the IRS has been targeting us. You've seen a lot of these investigations. How much of it is just holdover?
Well, you know, again, some of it may be holdover. I think what they need to do in terms of all of this is just say, look, we made mistakes. We're going to come clean and stop doing things. I mean, where they really made themselves look bad was on Friday, I guess, when they had that press briefing before the briefing, and they only invited certain members to press of it. It makes them look like they have something to hide.
Yeah. And it's the appearance of that you have something to hide more than even if you had nothing to hide, it's the appearance that you do.
Right. And that's the problem.
And, you know, for me, I look at this, and the more they fumble around, the more they, you know, they twiddle their thumbs on this, the more I see that. Because, look, I know the Republicans are looking for that thing, that gotcha moment, that maybe they can tie the country up for the next 2 or 3 years in investigations, and, you know, just like they did with Clinton at the end of his term.
Right, and they could do that. But what this administration needs to do is to really hunker down, put as much information as they can, and let the chips fall where they may.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, the thing that bothers me with all this, now we're going to be mired in this stuff for a while, for some time, and we're still not going to get business done. There'll be no jobs plan. There's going to be no push towards recovery. We're going to continue with just...
Well, it is interesting. There is no push towards recovery, but it looks like for the first time, and I don't think it's due to sequestration. That's not what the Congressional Budget Office is saying. But it does look like the federal budget deficit will be the smallest since the president became president, and it's going to be $642 billion is what they're estimating. That's about half of what it was before.
Right, but you know the thing is most rational economists have been saying, look, you allow the economy to recover, these deficits are going to go down by themselves. The sequestration, from what I've been reading from a lot of these economists, sequestration is actually going to make it worse because it's going to turn it back up the other direction because you're costing more on unemployment, you're costing more.
Well, it certainly will when you have a sequestration situation and you're making that everybody in the Pentagon take 11 days off. Makes no sense.
I mean, it makes no sense on a number of levels. I mean, I was reading this thing yesterday about our readiness to fight wildfires because season's coming around, so we're going to be cutting that readiness, that preparation. What happens when wildfire season hits and, oh, gee, we don't have the people.
And we don't have the money.
Well, you know, Ellen, money doesn't fix everything.
No, but what I'm saying is if you don't have the money, you don't have the people. Because the money is to get the people to help you with this.
So now it's going to be 11 days at the Pentagon. I thought it was 14.
They moved it to 11. Somehow they were able to figure it out. So it's now 11 days. But that's still 11 days. And if your guy takes 11 days and the guy next to you takes 11 days and they're not the same 11 days, that's 22 more days other than, you know, vacation, et cetera, that people are taking, that there's no communication and nothing going on.
You know what we do, Ellen? We just, like any crisis, we're in crisis, we do what corporatists love to do. We do away with the Fair Labor Standards Act, do away with prevailing wage, do away with contracts, set all this aside, say, you're going to work those 14 days for free because you love the country. What do you think?
All right. Can you imagine? That's not going to happen.
I go back to every crisis. I remember when Katrina happened, what was one of Bush's first ideas? Set aside the Fair Labor Standards Act. Set aside Davis-Bacon. Bush's father did the same thing when the hurricanes hit Florida, wanted to set aside Davis-Bacon.
Well, you know, again, fortunately, this administration is not quite there. That's good. They're not doing a good job at handling crises, but they're certainly not trying to set aside labor laws because labor would not put up with it, nor should they.
No, they shouldn't. But, you know, all of the idiotic, insane things this administration's doing, what the hell? Why not?
Well, I don't think they've gone that far.
So now I see that Dean Heller, the Republican senator from Nevada, saying, not going to give $40 million in appropriations for a new IRS agent.
Yes, and this has to do with the IRS agents that would be monitoring health care reform, making sure that people were, in fact, getting what they should in terms of what they're making from their taxes or getting back from taxes and or what they're going to owe for taxes, what corporations are going to owe. So if they figure if they don't have the enforcement money, this is the Republicans, through the IRS, then maybe Obamacare will go down. It's not going to happen, but it's an interesting twist to an old game.
I mean, at the end of this, if I remember the whole debate, you know, leading up to the passage of Obamacare, weren't these the IRS agents who were going to be the stormtroopers? Wasn't this the, you know, pretty much the Nazi guard?
Well, yes. I mean, I don't know whether it was going to be totally the Nazi guard, but I can tell you that the Republicans are trying to find any excuse they can to put away the Obama health care plan.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was another vote, I guess, recently, right? Another, well,
35th,
38th?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they just keep having votes, and they keep, you know, they can pass the House. They're going to get nowhere in the Senate. So you can be my guest. Have as many votes as you want.
Yeah, but my problem with this is, here again, we're spending all of this time, all of this money, all of this resource, and not doing anything to move us forward, just playing this back-and-forth ping-pong game.
Well, that is unfortunately the game in Washington. It is not being helped by the administration's communication department and by Obama not going more directly to the people. I've often said, you know, he does his what used to be called the radio address. Now it's called the weekly address. But people don't really listen to it. Get up on the Internet, do a Khan Academy kind of thing, and let the American people hear you explain what you're doing.
Yeah, I right from the beginning, I gave him credit right at the very beginning of his administration for doing just that. He was doing the evening, you know, chat from the White House, from the Oval Office. And then, you know, the Republicans were screaming, going, "Oh, you're blaming Bush too much." And all of a sudden, he just stopped. It's like he had rabbit ears and all of a sudden just shut down.
Well, I'm hoping he doesn't shut down. I'm hoping that he takes this as an opportunity to do some house cleaning and communications, open things up so that Americans really feel like they have a line into the White House.
Yeah, let me ask you about this. I just saw the story about the Russians arrested a guy who worked at the U.S. Embassy there in Moscow. What's going on with this?
Well, if he was like third in command and he supposedly was trying to recruit somebody and he had a lot of cash on him, but the other thing that he had on him was sort of a letter of instructions on how to set up a Google account to get them information. We're using Google? Google that when you put something like, you know, medical school in, you get advertisements for 1,500 medical schools?
Yeah.
I mean, it's staggering to me. If spycraft has gotten to that low level, I give up. You and I should run the CIA.
But, you know, what's better? It's right out in the open. You know, everybody has access to it. Who would believe? And what bothers me is he had to have a letter explaining how to set up a Google account. If he's
apparently, this is
spy,
what he was going to get now, according to the Russians. Now, maybe it was a setup. We're not going to hear yay or nay, obviously, from the CIA.
Yeah. And finally, a Republican has changed his stripes.
Yes. There is a Republican who was the community liaison for the Hispanic community in Florida. He basically felt like there is just no way with the Republican Party, and very openly became a Democrat.
There you go. Culture of intolerance, I understand, he believes.
That's right.
You think? I look at Rick Scott, the governor there. Is he appointing Alan West as the lieutenant governor?
That's a new one on me. Is that really true?
Somebody emailed me and said, hey, is this true? I said, I haven't looked into it. I figured I'd ask you.
Oh, my gosh. I just don't see that.
Alan West, lieutenant governor. I mean, the one just resigned, right?
Yes. He lost. He lost.
Oh, I thought the one resigned.
Oh, the lieutenant governor resigned. Yeah. But I thought you were talking about Alan West.
No,
yeah.
He lost. But
He lost big time.
But the lieutenant governor resigned, and they're going to turn to Alan West to bring him back.
I don't see that, but
that would be funny though.
Hey, it would be. We'd have a great time talking on radio about that.
He needs a job, Alan. It's always great talking with you. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Look forward to seeing you again. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
It was 75 years ago that Capital Blue Cross officially opened for business. From our earliest days, serving our customers has been at the heart of everything we do. Together we've lived history and made history. And we're here to help guide you as we navigate a new era in healthcare together. Explore affordable health insurance options and use our free online tools to search for a provider, look up treatment costs, and more. All at capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, celebrating 75 years of service. Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
Earth, sky. An asteroid you might not have known to worry about has been given the all clear.
Astronomers thought that this asteroid had the potential to collide with Earth in the year 2040. But data from the Gemini Observatory in Hawaii has shown that this asteroid will not collide with Earth. This asteroid is called 2011 AG5. It's about 140 meters in diameter, about the length of two American football fields.
Astronomers agree that if this object were to collide with the Earth, it would release several thousand times as much energy as the atomic bombs that ended World War II. Statistically, they say, a body of this size should impact the Earth on average every 10,000 years. But 2011 AG5 will not hit us in 2040.
Why do we hear so much nowadays about asteroids passing near Earth? The fact is that astronomers are now actively looking for asteroids that come near Earth. And that's why they're finding them. A telescopic survey of the sky, called the Mount Lemmon Survey, found asteroid 2011 AG5. This survey is specifically designed to look for asteroids that pass near Earth.
Astronomers found 2011 AG5 early in the year 2011. They had to observe its orbit long enough to be certain of it, to learn that Earth no longer falls along a possible future path for this asteroid in 2040. I'm Emily Howard.
And I'm Michael Brennan. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on Earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness.
Check out the website, therickSmithShow.com. Also, you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/RickSmithShow, and like us on Facebook, facebook.com/RickSmithShow. Let's go to the phones. Got James on line one. How are you doing tonight, James?
Hey, Rick. I'm doing fantastic. I'm out here in Monterey, California.
Oh, Monterey. So beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
How it is.
So you've got, it's only 9 o'clock out there. Well, what are you up to tonight?
I'm just sitting here blogging at a coffee shop. They're closing in about 10 minutes. I'm just packing everything up. I've got my cell phone. So I heard you were going to be on the radio. I thought I'd call in.
That's great.
And now, pleased to be here.
James, you work with an organization that is hoping to get a U.S. Parliament. So we're not quite so nailed by the people who are, well, elected with a plurality of the votes when less than half the people in the country vote and then less than half of them vote for the winner, as in the case of George W. Bush.
Yeah, it's proportional representation, and we've been counting votes under proportional representation for 18 consecutive years now, and it's really not that difficult if you can understand the concept that the number one beats any number and two of any number beats the number one when you elect two or more people, and the people use the ranking where you rank when you vote. You have to rank consecutive numbers beginning with the number one, and that's how you can get an extremely exact form of proportional representation.
When you talk about ranked choice voting, the example I always like to use is that god-awful 2000 presidential election when you had, as people think, Ralph Nader, George Bush, Al Gore. I hate even talking about it because it's such a dark hour, right?
It's a dark moment.
There were 17 other candidates on the ballot in Florida that election. 17 other candidates that got more votes added together than Ralph Nader got, although no one wants to talk about that. What they want to talk about is that somebody screwed up the system for somebody else. But let's just say all that's true, even though it's not. And by the way, Al Gore won. But let's just not say any of that's true, that we have those three choices. If someone got to pick their first choice and it was George Bush, or their first choice and it was Al Gore, their second choice would never have been the other guy. Their second choice always would have been Ralph Nader for either one of those selections, right?
Right.
But everybody who voted first choice for Ralph Nader, their second choice would have been Al Gore.
Well, isn't that the question that talking about instant runoff voting then?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you vote your conscience, which, you know, a lot of times I go to the polls and I vote for somebody that go, yeah, this is the lesser of two evils. I would like to be able to vote who I want to and then not say, okay, I'm not going to throw my vote away.
My lesser of two evils vote will be my second vote.
There you go.
And I get to vote my second vote.
I hate to interrupt you, too, but I have some news for you about this. Basically, what you're talking about is ranked choice voting on a single winner, like president.
Right. That's true.
And that doesn't actually give you proportional representation. You have to do it in two or more. The more the better, like an assembly.
Mm-hmm.
It's only for multi-winner districts. When you have a single winner, that's like winner-take-all, where even though they did win with the majority, it guarantees 50% plus one, but still the other 49% doesn't win. And so a lot of voting reform activists don't realize that when you use this on a single winner, it actually does harm, because you disenfranchise almost half the voters. So if you use
and James,
it as
I would only say that's true if you end up with somebody who doesn't care if they ever get elected again. Because when you're elected, you don't just represent the people who voted for you. You represent everyone.
Right.
And
yes,
with an opportunity.
But the thing is, Pat, is what I do, it creates unity. The unity psychology, it only works when you have a team. Two or more makes a team. When it's only one person, it's a different, when you use proportional representation, it's more of a unity psychology, to where your satisfaction level is guaranteed to be 66.66% plus two votes when you elect two people. And so I know that you want to apply it to a single winner, but it's for proportional representation. I mean,
well, if we move on to what you're saying, which is there shouldn't be a single winner because we should have proportional representation in the
really
form of a parliament, then I agree with you. We should, in that case, we could have, as they have in Iraq, 267 political parties, because all you have to have is one 267th of the vote to get a seat in parliament.
Yeah, so everybody wins something. And even if it's only, say, president and vice president, just say pretend that it was a Democrat and a Republican on the same ticket, you'd have a lot more people satisfied with getting some more representation in the executive, maybe as a unity, kind of like they did in England with the conservative and the liberal Democrats working together. But they don't even use proportional representation there either. But when you have a single winner, it's usually a psychology like, I'm better than everyone else. Like, Ralph Nader is better than everyone, or Al Gore is better than everyone. So you really have to have the two-member minimum in order to have that team psychology. And it's actually not, it's more harmful if you use ranked-choice voting on a single winner, in my opinion, because we live in a two-party system, like in San Francisco, where they adopted it as, for the city level, 11 single-winner districts under ranked-choice voting, runoff voting. Republicans can't win in any of those 11 districts because it's so largely Democratic in San Francisco.
I'm getting ready to move here. I'm packing my bags.
What does this look like?
The state Republican Party, now they're really mad because they can't win any Republican seats in the city of San Francisco.
There has not been a Republican elected in Portland, Maine in 2 decades.
And nor should there be.
But there are two parties in Portland, and it's the Democratic Party and the Green Party. And there has not been, and they don't have ranked choice voting. They just have a plurality, and a Republican still can't get elected.
Yeah, and so what proportional representation is giving everybody representation, the more the better. In other words,
so if 30% of the people in that 12. Town, if 30% of the people in that town think that they're Republican and vote that way, then 30% of the seats would be Republican.
They might get maybe vice mayor.
They might not get mayor.
How can you put that into our system? Into our constitution.
You have to change our system.
Yeah.
No, it's not a constitutional. They actually use this in Cambridge, Massachusetts they have a 9-member city council there. And so they have three, it's a nonpartisan. And so, usually they've been using it for more than 60, 70 years. And the whole town gets together. It takes about 3 days of counting the votes in the gymnasium. And everybody watches, they use the single transferable vote where they do the ranking. And they always, they have different civic groups. It's very stable. They love it. It's, the mathematical equation is if there's 9 seats, then it's the closest you could come to a 10-way tie. Any name that gets 1/10 of the total votes plus one vote breaks the tie. The first 9 names win in consecutive order.
That's basically
the equation.
It's good. Well, I appreciate the input. Thanks, James.
Yeah, thank you so much for your time. And I hope you like that.
Yeah.
Have a great day.
I like any idea that gets people involved and you start talking about how you get people engaged and activated. And, I don't think it's ever going to happen here. There's a better chance of getting instant runoff voting so that you can then maybe create some other push,
As a person who ran for office and got 10% of the vote when I ran for governor of the state of Maine, got 10% of the vote, and the guy who won didn't put 10% of the people who supported me, or didn't use 10% of his cabinet or 10% of his for the people who supported me, and that would have been really great, If you're going to win with he won with 35% of the vote, won governor of a state with 35% of the vote. I had 10%. No representation for my 10. The Republican had 32% of the vote. No Republicans in that cabinet either. There was another independent in the race. She got 9% of the vote. She didn't get any. So this one guy who gets 35% of the vote gets a plurality of the support and a totality of the power. That is crazy.
Which is why I've always been a fan of instant runoff voting. I don't think you should hold office with less than 50% of the vote.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, just not happening.
Yeah.
Anyway, if you missed any portion of the program, therickssmithshow.com, best place to get the podcast, or hey, on your smartphone, Stitcher, thepeoplestourforamerica.com, our website of the big tour we're going to be embarking on June 6th as we move across the country. Looking forward. Can't wait. Good stuff. Have a great night. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the lunar sway. Imperial, mysterious, in amorous array. Democracy is coming. There you can stay.